This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to another episode of Rank and File. If the Place to Be Nation ever got their own Monopoly game, we would be the Marvin Gardens on the board. We're strong and we're steady, but we're not really that great. My name is Jordan Duncan. I am the host of Rank and File. Thanks once again for listening. If this is your first time listening to an episode, here's what we are. We are a top 10 countdown show. Every month we have a different topic and a different panel of guests. Each guest that is on will give us their top 10 of that month's topic, starting with number 10, going all the way down to number 1. I'm going to be keeping score along the way, and at the end, we're going to tally up the points and reveal the official Rank and File top 10 list of that topic. Last month, we talked about SummerSlam. This month, we are going in a very, very, very different direction, but there is some crossover because one of our first guests was on the SummerSlam episode with us, making his second appearance on Rank and File in a row and overall. Mr. Chad Campbell, welcome back to the show, Chad.
Thanks for having me. I'm just trying to beat Steve Willey. That's my only goal in life.
That's
so
all any of us want to do.
Yeah, so any list you have from here on out, I'm an expert on it, awesome. No matter the topic.
I can tell you, I am beating him at Pokemon. I've got more Pokemon than he does.
So. Oh, excellent news.
I don't know if that's something I should be proud of or ashamed of.
I'm kind of scared that both of y'all know where y'all stand compared to each other in regards to Pokemon.
We legitimately text each other screenshots of what we've caught. So. Sorry to throw you under the bus there, Steve, but I don't think any of us are getting any cool points, especially when we start getting really into this topic. I don't think this is going to gain us any street cred. So, hey, let's bring in our other guest. He has been on Rank and File, I don't know, 30, 40 times, even though it's only like our 12th episode. I love having him on because he always is a lot of fun to talk to, and a lot of fun to listen to. It's Glenn Butler. Glenn, welcome back to the show, man.
Thank you for having me. You know, I think in my basement I have a couple copies of something that was marketed in the late 90s, I think, called Make Your Own Opoly, which is a blank Monopoly board that you can write on with a marker. So I think it would definitely be possible to make a Place to Be Nation. You might have to stretch into a PWOPTBN, but You could definitely make a Monopoly board with all of our personalities and shows and tropes. It would probably be a little navel-gazy, you think?
Yeah, but that's kind of what we're here for.
Sure.
Can we just say the Steve Carino show would be like Baltic Avenue? Can we just can we agree there?
No, Steve Carino is the guy in prison behind the bars.
Free parking.
Free parking. What would be the luxury tax on our make-your-own-opoly?
Probably Brad and Chad, because it's so rare.
Yeah. No, the luxury tax is your share of the tailgate for WrestleMania.
Oh. Perfect.
Perfect. Oh, I love it.
I don't think this is the worst idea in the world, Glenn.
I mean, we've thought about bingo. Might as well get Monopoly, get all the board games in there.
Yeah, and just market it and sell it. Let's see how big our audience really is and how deep their pockets are.
Yeah, we'll put it on Patreon.
Yeah.
PTB Monopoly.
Guys, it is a lot of work to do these podcasts, so if you want to keep hearing them.
Yeah, 10 copies or we're shutting this thing down, man.
Hey, folks, contact me and I can tell you my PayPal address, please.
Sounds great. So, hey, guys, Glenn, I feel like we went through this stretch where we were on shows together seemingly every week for a couple months. And then it faded away, and now we're back again. So I don't know what you're doing next week, but there's a good chance we're probably on a podcast together.
Hey, my body is ready.
And my mind is willing, so let's do this. So, guys, let's talk about what we're talking about tonight. Let's talk about our topic. All three of us are board game – I wouldn't say aficionados. I would say Chad is the aficionado
as ever.
I'm more of the geek. Glenn, where would you fall on that spectrum?
I would say that I'm a casual aficionado of the tabletop gaming experience, if you could say that. It's very much just in the context of what I'm doing with my friends. Not a lot of gathering things for myself or just for, you know, family or roommates or whatever, but very much in that social context, so casual in that way.
Cool. That's kind of what I was thinking of when I called myself a geek. So I'm going to change that. And now I'm a casual. I'm not a geek anymore. So this is why I have you on my shows, Glenn, because you give me nicer ways to describe myself.
Well,
so.
I may be casual in the variety and amount of these games that I play, but I always, as with anything, approach them in my typical freaking geeky manner, as we'll see as we proceed through this discussion.
Yeah, so our discussion tonight is we're going to be talking about and ranking our top 10 tabletop games. And now that covers board games, card games, dice games, whatever you want. And I think this is actually a pretty interesting topic. Like, at first I was thinking, I don't know who's going to want to listen to that. But I think it's kind of a growing interest. From my experience and people that I know, I found more people who want to have game nights and get together and play some stuff. And I see more more sections at stores like Target and things like that. The game section is growing. It's kind of becoming a staple in that section of stores around here, at least. So I think it's a growing interest, and it's something that's becoming a bigger thing than maybe it was 2, 3, 4 years ago. Chad, excuse me, Chad, in our last show that we were on together, you kind of talked about how you've been you've been pretty big on this for a few years now. Would you agree that it seems to be growing the tabletop market or interest?
Yeah, I mean, of course, this is kind of primarily we may have some wrestling crossover here, so we're sort of in the attitude era of tabletop gaming right now. You know, it's that type of thing where 2 or 3 years ago, you may have not known anybody that played, except you and your close-knit group, and now it's not unheard of. Like, you know, I bring out tabletop games at lunch and I'm not immediately shut down at work and stuff like that. So it's growing.
Yeah, I do think there is a line to be drawn at where it's acceptable and where it's not. This past summer, I have a buddy who is big-time gamer like that, and we talk about it. We played some games and stuff, and we were at a wedding. And as we were sitting at the wedding reception, he pulled out a game, and I'm like, but I played anyways. So, you know.
Yeah. Restaurants are usually where I'm kind of like, oh, I don't know. Because especially before me and my wife had Caden a couple years ago when we first, you know, had a couple of card games that we could play. Mm-hmm. It was always kind of like, do we really want to be those people kind of,
yeah,
you know,
right.
eating cheese dip and playing a card game in the corner? But, yeah, I don't know.
So one thing I think is cool about the three of us is I think we're going to kind of attack this from different ways. Chad, you've got maybe the most experience in this world, and I know you're probably going to have some games that maybe Glenn and I haven't even played. A lot of my games are approached from the sense of we have game nights. Usually we wind up at my house, and a lot of our friends have kids, so it's a lot of stuff that kind of has to be kid-friendly. Sometimes we shoo the kids out of the room, whereas Glenn, I know you talked about how you get together with friends from college and stuff like that, which is definitely not going to be bring the kids type stuff. So I don't know if that will reflect in our list, but I was thinking about it, and it might show some variance and things like that. So normally we get started with an honorable mention. We'll talk about honorable mentions coming out of the break. And let's just get right into the list. You guys got cool with that? You got anything else you want to add to it before we get going?
Well, all I'll say is at the game days that my friends and I have held, instead of bringing kids, we've brought wine. So that's the sort of party we're having.
Yeah, exactly. So kids might be made eventually. Who knows? You know, Chad, you mentioned the wrestling crossover. Do you guys remember now, Glenn? I don't think you would because I know you got into wrestling later. There used to be a WWF. It was like a VCR board game. Which yeah. Even VCR board games are kind of you know, antiquated thing. But it was a pretty cool. I had it, but I don't remember anything about it other than you could watch some wrestling while you were playing it.
Yeah, I still have it
at
my parents' house. I need to dig that up one day and dust off one of the 7 VCRs they somehow still own for some reason. And,
good Lord.
See it. I don't know. Yeah, the other, about 2 months ago, my parents finally just said, like, kind of sift through this crap and we're throwing out what you don't want. And it had some of my old, like, comp tapes, some playing cards from, like, 1991 circa WWL for, like, Ultimate Warrior on the cover. And then that VCR game was buried in there, too. And I'll just mention this quickly. I don't know if either of y'all know this, but in the late 90s, early 2000s, there was a collectible card game called Raw Deal, which actually has a pretty big underground following in the board game nerd community. It's very rare if you have a complete Raw Deal set, kind of like a, you know, action Magic the Gathering, that type of, you know, collectible card game.
Yeah.
But with wrestlers. So that's kind of interesting, the crossover of
that. Sounds somewhat familiar, but not.
Yeah, I'd never had heard of it till, you know, like a year or two ago.
Nothing beyond the name, really. That does sound kind of, but yeah, not too much. So, but yeah, so no VCR required games made my list. I will give you that quick
spoiler. Didn't make it.
Yeah, just by the skin of its teeth did it not make it. So I'd like to, I think you should watch just the VCR tape. Do a review on the tape of the board game.
Yeah, I think it's Andre and Hulk on the cover from WrestleMania 4, to remember. It's like right in that bear hug when, you had the VHS right when they went to tape number 2.
Okay.
It's like that spot is the spot they went with for the VCR game.
So Glenn might be a fan of this game. Who knows?
I
wonder if Uncle Elmer's on there. If so, Scott might be raring to go there. Scott Butler, not Scott.
Hey, you know what? When Scott, my Scott, was first getting me into wrestling, the first show that he showed me was WrestleMania 4.
Wow. Was his thinking, if he'll watch this, he'll like all of it?
And they stuck around. And the illegally procured copy that we had at the time was from that VHS tape. And so it had that break in the middle of the match when you go to file 2.
Yeah, love it.
That's awesome. Good stuff. Yeah. Good stuff. All right, well, let's get going with our top 10 list. And, Chad, why don't you start things off and give us your number 10?
Okay. My number 10 is actually a party game. I would classify maybe one more game coming up as a party game, but this one definitely is. It's called Time's Up. Have either of y'all ever heard of that one?
Heard of it? Don't think I've played it.
Okay, it's by R&R Games, and I'm specifically talking about Time's Up Title Recall, that version. So essentially in Time's Up, you're in pairs of two, you and a partner, and everybody has the same 30 cards that they're going through, and it's all movie title, book titles, album titles, stuff like that. And in the first round, you can basically say anything but the actual name, so it's like a password deal.
Yeah, okay, I've played this.
Yeah, and in the second round, it's the same exact cards, but you can only say one word. Mm-hmm. And then in the third round, it's just gestures. And what I really like about this game, kind of compared to other party games, is I don't think you have to be an expert to know, because it's the same card, so there's that kind of memorization aspect to it. And I've never not played a game of this and just found something hilarious where, you know, some weird guess for, like, Law and Order then becomes the thing you say, you know, in round two. Like if, you know, if somebody says, I don't even know what the comparison is, but, like, the Foo Fighters for Law and Order, then in round two you can say, you know, Foo, and the person could say Law and Order. So I just love how it kind of plays off each other. Mm-hmm. And it's my favorite party game by far, and always one, like I said, that I've just had a blast to play with.
You know what's funny about this game is you called it Time's Up Title Recall. I've played this game, but never like the actual board game version. I've just had people be like, hey, write stuff down on a slip of paper, you know, and we just kind of played our own version of it.
You know, yeah. So. Yeah, I mean, it's something you can certainly customize, really. Yeah,
I was hoping for a Time's Up Total Recall board game version, which is all about the Arnold movie. You know, it'd be a lot of fun. So, Glenn, have you ever played this game?
No, but I would be excited to play it with the phrase, considered after divorce.
You could just act out that part where he has to pull that little orb out of his nose. You know, so.
Yes.
But yeah, this game's it is a good fun party game because, like Chad said, you don't have to be like, you know, sometimes, you know, if you're not real good at pop culture or something like that, party games are not your thing at all. Yeah. But in this game, the first round might be tough for you, but if you can just remember what was already answered, then you can participate real easily in the second, the third round and stuff like that. So it's a fun game. It's easy to learn. And even if you are doing the same things over and over, you can just play it repeatedly. So, yeah, that's a cool little way to start our list.
One thing, too, that I didn't mention in the actual game, the official version, each person can throw out two cards before you start, too. So if you get something you have no idea what that is, you could just throw it out. So I think that helps too. I have a key kind of group of people I usually play games with, and my sister-in-law is not a gamer at all. She despises pretty much anything kind of advanced from something like Time's Up. But Time's Up, she can dig and play. So that's kind of why it hits that bar of being the perfect party game for me.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot of fun. And that raises another question before we go on any farther on our list. You know, you have your group of people that you play your games with. You learn their skills and their weaknesses, don't you?
Yes.
Pretty
yes.
quickly. We have a married couple who we play a lot of games with, Jeff and Jen, and whenever we do, let's do guys versus girls tonight. I just pray and silently hope that we do nothing involving Pictionary or drawing, because my friend Jeff, I think he's the guy who drew all the cave drawings on the walls of cavemen, because he's the worst artist I've ever seen in my life. So, but yeah, there's definitely certain games where when that game gets pulled out, you look around the room and you're like, all right, I got to play with this guy rather than
right, this. Right.
So, but, yeah. All right, cool. Good start to the list. Glenn, why don't you give us your number 10?
My number 10 is a game that comes in a few different forms. More people might know it as Mafia or Werewolf, but the version that I have is Salem, which is in the Salem Witch Trials. And at the beginning of the game, one or two people, depending on how many people you have, are designated as a witch. And their goal is to make other people the witch by game mechanics that have people trade the identity cards and such, and during the course of the game, people put down accusations. If you get a certain number of accusations, you have to reveal one of your identity cards. You have five, and, you know, one of them might be the one that says you're a witch. And so, you go through several different rounds, and it gets you kind of seeing which people in your group are good at keeping secrets and which are not, which has a definite effect on this style of game. And if you have, like in my game day group, some kind of playful rivalries, like one of my friends we're always accusing of being the witch, the traitor in any game. And honestly, he barely ever is. But we always accuse him, and so, you know, sometimes that lets someone else kind of swoop in and win, but sometimes not. Sometimes he actually is. But I really like the witch trial setting, and I like that element of suspicion, and sometimes of someone who can't stay quiet during the round when everyone has their eyes closed, and you know, the person who's just really, really bad at being the witch.
I've played Mafia. I have not played Salem, so I mean, it does sound very, very similar. So the end goal of the game is to discover the witch, basically.
For all the non-witches, it is, yes.
Okay, and burn them at the stake.
So, presumably, yes.
Yeah. So game nights don't always end too well with Glenn. So, but yeah, I played Mafia. Sounds pretty much the same thing. So yeah, we will kind of count those all together. And I've never played Werewolf, but I kind of knew they were together. Is that? Have you played Werewolf? How would you compare that?
I haven't played that particular variation.
Okay, neither have I. So, Chad, have you played Werewolf?
Yeah, how long...
And how about Salem have you played, too?
I have not played Salem. I've played Werewolf and Mafia, okay. Which I would say are pretty much spitting images of each other. Mm-hmm. Now, how long is Salem, typically? Is it quick or, you know, an hour or so?
I've played games of Salem that have gone half an hour to 45 minutes. I played one game once that went over an hour because, like, nobody was picking up the witch card, and so we just slowly eliminated people. So sometimes it can drag on like that, but that's kind of random chance.
Okay.
Because the only thing for me with Werewolf, and Werewolf is like a staple of the convention scene, where late night Werewolf is like the thing. I know it sounds nerdy, but like 2 a.m. Werewolf. The only thing I don't really like about Werewolf is if you are targeted right away, you're pretty much sitting there for the rest of the game. And does Salem have a moderator?
What Salem has is special abilities. At the beginning of the game, you are randomly dealt a character card for a personality from the Witch Trial era. You could be Giles Corey or Tituba or other people from that era. And different cards let you do different things. Like, some people are invulnerable to some parts of suspicion. Some people can remove suspicion or accusations from themselves. There are other cards that you draw over the course of the game. You can draw items or abilities or additional accusations that you would then play on the other players. And so there are ways to remove accusations and protect yourself or protect other people.
Yeah, that sounds good. That sounds kind of similar to One Night Ultimate Werewolf, which is my favorite version of Werewolf. Because I was going to say, like, in Werewolf, there's always a moderator. And if you have a crappy moderator, you're in for a pretty crappy time. Usually, yeah, that's just kind of the way it goes. But yeah, this sounds like that sort of corrects that by assigning roles and kind of making the game flow that way, which I think is optimal.
Yeah, it does sound a little more complex than Mafia. It's worth a shot. So that's one thing I was most excited about with this countdown was getting some games that I've never played from you guys and writing them down so I can try them out later. So Salem was definitely one that I would try. So since I haven't played, it's not on my list. Chad, did it make your list at all?
No iterations of Werewolf, Salem, or Mafia made my list, you know.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll finish off the number 10, and I wanted to start mine with something that people would know, because, you know, if there's anyone listening that's not really a big game player, so far we've listed Time's Up and Salem, which are not really, you know, stuff you see on there. So there's one that I just wanted to kind of give some love to. I always use my number 10 for this, like a personal favorite, and it's probably my favorite childhood game that I still play here and there. It's not really a big game night game, but I listed Clue on my top 10 list, and I put Clue at my 10th spot. I still like playing it with the family here and there. And one thing I think about Clue when I think of, like, all the childhood games, you know, you got your Monopolies and Sorry and games like that. One, I think Clue holds up, and two, I think you see a lot of games that are inspired by it or almost trying to present themselves as, like, a modern day version of Clue. But, I mean, it's a basic game. I don't even think I need to describe how it's played, because anyone listening to a board game podcast probably knows what Clue is. But, you know, it's a game that you can know and still not ever win. My son loves to play. My 13-year-old son loves to play. It's his favorite game. He loves to get, like, super detective-y about it and, like, skulk across the room, like, pondering and things like that. So it's just a fun game to really kind of get into a little bit. Simple, classic board game that I wanted to start off on my list. Guys, what do you think about Clue? Chad?
Clue is, of the kind of classic traditional board games, Clue is my favorite. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I would be into board games if I had never played Clue. I still remember in Clue the first time I proved myself wrong. is like one of those pivotal moments when, you know, nobody else could prove me wrong. So I knew like nobody else had that certain.
Oh, yeah.
Like you weapon were using or whatever.
To throw
right. To throw off the scent. And if they say no, that means, okay. So I proved myself wrong. That was kind of when a light bulb went off that you could sort of, you know, game the game, which I really enjoy. I would still love Clue. I think there's an entry coming up later on my list that is essentially what I kind of call modern Clue, like you were talking about. That has a I'll talk about it when I get to it. But the only critique I'll say I'll have of Clue is I think the board's a little too big. So if you know where the room is,
yeah, it takes you a while to get
right. You people can see you know, actively stalking towards that room, and you keep rolling one or twos.
Yeah,
and then somebody's able to kind of just beat you to the room instead of using deduction to figure it out.
Not the best. We actually have a kind of a current version of it because we got it for our son for Christmas a couple years ago, and I don't think I like it. It's got little question marks on the board, and if you get to the question mark, you kind of draw like a bonus card, and I don't like that added element. It's kind of like you can do an accusation right now, and it's like, well, that's stupid, you know.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. I mean, but the characters are iconic.
Absolutely.
Love Professor Plum. That was always my guy. Well, him and Colonel Mustard.
That's how I was going to lead to Glenn. Glenn, which Clue character resonates most with you?
Tim Curry. Clue has to be the best game movie ever made, right?
Oh, yeah. What is it even up against? Battleship is the
only other one. Yeah, what's up against? Like, Super Mario Brothers? Please.
Well, I guess, does Jumanji count?
I'd still
probably rank Clue ahead of it, but
was Jumanji an actual game before the movie?
I don't know.
I don't think was a game before the movie.
Like, was there an actual board game that you could buy that would release hordes of elephants and stuff?
Well, I'm sure they created some type of cross promotional game, but
the 90s was an era of a lot of tie-in board games. I mean, they have them even now, but I know I had the Home Alone board game as a child. That is not the next item on my list. But no, as far as Clue's concerned, that's not one that I had as a kid, but a friend of mine had Simpsons Clue, so that was cool. And obviously the best game movie ever.
Yeah, definitely a good one. And Clue is another game that we had the VCR version of, and it failed pretty miserably. It might work better on DVD because how it would work was like if you made an accusation, it would say fast forward to 24 minutes. Well, on a VCR, you hit fast forward and you just got to sit there and watch it fast forward. And so many times either you would forget to press stop so you were watching stuff act out, or you'd fast forward too far and, you know, you'd kind of see an answer or something like that. So it didn't work out real well. I think it's a game that people that they try to improve upon, and it's like, well, it's already pretty good. You don't have to add, you know, bells and whistles and something that already works. So
yeah, I do know the DVD version is kind of like a cult favorite.
Really?
The Museum Caper, I think, is kind of the tagline.
Never played that one.
Oh yeah, on Board Game Geek, that's the kind of the go-to Clue if you want a Clue in your collection. It's pretty tough to find, pretty expensive actually if you have a good copy. So.
Wow. Okay.
Keep that in mind if you come across it on a yard sale.
Well, Glenn, you mentioned that Home Alone was not your number 9. So why don't you tell us what your number 9 is?
My number 9 is something that I mentioned on our introduction to the PTB Play series. Mm-hmm. That's the Machine of Death game, which I mentioned as one that has kind of a madcap collective play segment where everyone is trying to put together an assassination given a certain method that a person has to die. And I won't go into a whole ton of more detail because you can listen to our introductory episode for the series for that. But I have had a lot of fun with a couple different groups with that game.
Yeah, Glenn went into great detail on it on our kickoff podcast for the PTBN Play feed, so you can hear all about Machine of Death on there. But it does sound a lot of fun, and it sounds like a game that would be right up my alley. And I actually wrote that one down as one that I kind of want to check out sometime. So, Chad, have you played Machine of Death? I think that was one you actually hadn't played, correct?
Yeah, it was one I actually had never heard of until Glenn mentioned it. And, yeah, seeked it out, looked up a little bit of it, and it looked interesting. I'd certainly be willing to give it a shot.
Yeah,
yeah, that's one thing about my first two games here, where they're both games that I got on Kickstarter.
Oh, cool. Nice. Okay. So here's what I think. Since you know they're not going to listen to this episode, I say for WrestleMania 33, if you guys are planning on going down there, we all pack up some of our games, and at the tailgate, once Nick Duke is passed out drunk, we just start playing these games, whether those guys like it or not. What do you think? We turn it into like our own little con.
Either that or we just start talking about Big Brother because they seem to enjoy they really that as like well. That
too. So. But yeah, Glenn, if for some reason I am at WrestleMania and you are at WrestleMania, I fully expect you to have the Machine of Death with you.
Hey, in that unlikely event, I will make sure to pack it.
Yeah, I would like you to explain at the airport. Excuse me, sir, what's in your bag? Oh, it's just the Machine of Death.
That was actually one of the updates to the Kickstarter because they were shipping the game over from China and... it's a card-based game. It has a an hourglass and some dice as well, but it's mostly cards for all of the abilities and causes of death and everything. And so they tried to like X-ray the container for this game, and it was a solid block of paper, and they weren't able to see into it very well with the X-ray at customs. And so they asked, well, what does this container contain? And the answer was, the Machine of Death.
That is pretty awesome. That's good stuff. So, oh, cool. So there's another one that not everyone has played. So these early votes are probably going to be moving pretty quick. And as always, guys, if we reveal one thing on our list that's way higher on yours, you don't have to talk about it right then and there. Just let us know, hey, it's on my list, and we'll talk about it when we get there. So, and the reason I mentioned that is I'll give you my number 9, and it's one that might be on your guys' list because it's a pretty popular game. It's only number 9 on my list because I've only played it a couple times, but I really enjoyed it when I did. A friend of mine owns it, and it's one of those things where if you know a friend has it, you're a little more hesitant to buy it because it's like, well, I can just play it when they come over. But it's Pandemic. And Pandemic is essentially a cooperative game, which honestly was kind of a drawback for me. I kind of like games where you either win or you lose, not let's all work together. And you basically have to stop viruses from spreading across the world. And there's a whole bunch of different versions of it, but I basically played the first generation Pandemic, as far as I know. And we had a good time. We played a couple times. I thought we were going to win, and we didn't, and humanity was doomed. And I take full responsibility for that. I could not get to Moscow in time. So it's my fault that the world ended. So I'm sure, Chad, have you played Pandemic? I believe you have. I'm pretty sure you've talked about it before.
Yeah. Well, I'll probably say my thoughts on Pandemic later.
Cool. Okay. Yeah. Glenn, how about you? Have you played this one?
I too shall address this at a later time.
I thought so, and I wanted to get it on there, but I couldn't really justify it being higher on my list just because I've only played it, I think, 4 times maybe, whereas everything else on my list I've got some good experience in. So, all right, cool. Then we will talk about Pandemic later on in our list. Good. Chad, why don't you finish off our number 9s?
And funny you said you've only played Pandemic 4 times, because my number 9 is one that I've just played 4 times or so. Mm-hmm. And it was a popular game kind of within this community, and it's still a game you can find relatively easy at like a Barnes & Noble. It came out in 2011. It's called Seven Wonders.
Oh, yeah, I played that.
Yeah, so I kind of – the way I describe it is – sort of like Advanced Sushi Go.
That's exactly how I describe it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the first time you play it, you're sort of like, oh, this is kind of wonky. And mm-hmm. I don't quite understand how, because there's science and there's military aspects you can strategize and go towards. But about halfway through your first game, I think a light bulb kind of clicks off mm-hmm. in your head and turns on. And then the next game, it's much quicker. It's like half the time it took us to play the first game, the second game. And from that, we've been rolling. Like, this is one I've had for a while and just never played because it was kind of, I don't know, it's kind of one of those weird things where it came out right before I got into tabletop. And then by that time, I was into the other kind of flavor of the month, you know, hot games. So I kind of never got around to this one, but I really enjoy it. And the other aspect of it, it is you're drafting cards and then exchanging those to the people around the table. But I will just say, like, one thing, there's a lot of games I've played where I kind of feel like it's solitary in a way, where you're sort of doing your own thing. And if you're playing against somebody, you don't really know what they're doing, and at the end of the game, you don't know if you won or lost. You know, it's kind of I don't really know how I did because I'm paying attention to me. there's a game I played a lot because Jennifer likes it, called Viceroy, and she always smokes me in that game because in that game you're kind of building up your own pyramid, and I'm so concentrating on mine, I don't know what she's doing, and apparently she's doing stuff correctly because she always creeps me. While I enjoy those types of games, I don't enjoy that aspect, and that's why I like Seven Wonders, because I do think you have to pay attention a little bit to what the people around you are doing, and you can kind of screw them if you want to.
Sure can, yeah.
Or, you know, you can look at, like, the military and stuff and get them that way. So I like that there is some interaction there, and you don't just kind of concentrate on your own plateau in front of you.
Yeah, I would describe it almost exactly as you would, and kind of like Sushi Go, but with a lot more thinking to it. Glenn, have you played Seven Wonders?
I haven't. That's not one that anyone in my group has, but I've been meaning to get it for some time because I've heard such good things about it.
Yeah, it's basically you get one of the Seven Wonders of the ancient world, and you get shuffled cards like Sushi Go, which... I just assume you know what that means. And, you know, you'll draw a card that you will play as your card. You pass the rest to the person to the left, then they will draw a card, and so on until all the cards are dealt out. And as Chad was talking about military, maybe you'll play some military cards. And at the end of the round, you compare your military to the people on either side of you. If yours is stronger, you get some military points. Science is there's like three different symbols. I don't remember
right.
if they stand for anything. But if you can get them all together throughout the game, you get these bonus points at the end. And then your actual wonder has some bonuses that you can get as well. So there's some benefit to whichever one you get. It's pretty complex, and it's almost deterring, I think, when you look at the game for the first time and someone tries to explain it, because it's not a game that's real easy to explain.
No,
and
not at all.
We played it with a group. We had enough people to play the whole – like all of the wonders were passed out, and half of us were in it. And the other half were like checked out, like, this is dumb. And we stuck through it. And like you said, once that light bulb goes off, you're like, oh, I'm getting this. And then all of a sudden, you know, the wheels start to turn, and it's pretty fun. And even like you said, even though the cards are all out and you can kind of see where everyone's at, it's not so obvious who won. You have an idea of who's doing well, but there's so many different ways to score at the end. When you start adding it all up, you're kind of like, okay, did I win? Where am I at? You know, did I get enough science? Did I get enough of this or that? So, yeah, it's a lot of fun. I don't own it, and that's why it didn't make my list, because I haven't played it enough. But it's a really fun game. Now, there's one wonder, though, and I want to say it's the Great Wall or either the Pyramids, and it's just like the sucky one to get because none of the bonuses are worth anything.
Yeah, I mean, me personally, I've never usually go for the wonders just as a strategy.
Me either.
I'm a science guy.
Yeah, same here.
Nerd all the way. But but like my sister-in-law, she's for the merchant, so she has a huge market built up, which in turn, you know, people are just buying stuff from her left and right mm-hmm. as the game progresses and giving her money. So yeah, I just think it's very easy to kind of the way it's color coordinated, it's easy to really visually see what strategy the other people are doing.
Yeah, like, and then you can either purple. Yeah,
right, right. So then you can either diversify or kind of attack it head on if you want to.
Yeah, it is a fun game though. So yeah, I'm glad that I got ranked. And I thought about it and thought, well, I haven't played that enough. And then when I was really going over the details, I just didn't come back into my brain. So, but that is a good one. And that is Chad's number 9, which finishes off our 9s. So why don't I get things going with number 8? And funny enough, my number 8 is Sushi Go.
Nice.
Which is, like we talked about, sort of like Seven Wonders. I think there's a lot less strategy to it. It's a lot more fun. But Sushi Go is basically a card passing game. Everyone's dealt, what is it, 7 cards, something like that? Or does it depend on how many you're playing? You choose a card that's you're going to play. You pass the rest to the left. When you get cards passed, and you just kind of continue until the round's over. You score points with different ways, with the wasabi and the nigiris and the dumplings and all kinds of things. And if you've played the game, you know exactly what I'm talking about. If you've never played the game, you're like, "What is this?" You know. But it's a really fun looking game. You know, it almost looks like a children's game, yep. And kids can play it. But it's not really just for kids, you know. It's cartoony looking on the cards and stuff like that. But I have a lot of fun with Sushi Go. It's easy to pick up and get going with. How about you guys? Where does Sushi Go land for you in terms of fun factor?
I mean, for me, it's a great filler. Yeah. It's one like, you know, end of the night, or we just played something that's kind of a brain burner. Let's do something light and fun. Sushi Go always seems to be kind of one of the first things turned out. It's probably one of the games I've actually played the most, just because it is so like too. 50 minutes to play.
Yeah, and anybody can play it.
Right, right, you know. And works for any group. So, yeah, a great game.
Glenn, are you a Sushi Go man? Have you played?
That's actually one that I haven't played, but from what I've heard, it sounds adorable.
It really, yeah, that's a good way to describe it. You know, it's fun. It's easy. Chad, let me ask you this. What is your stance on pudding?
It's not something I go for.
Me either.
Yeah. But I don't want to be last.
Yeah.
usually in round 2, I'll take one.
Yep. And kind of give the board a quick glance.
Right. Just so I can have that where, you know, I'm not depending on the third round that I got to get one early. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, in the second round, if I get one early, I'll put it down. But I really, in Sushi Go, I go for the wasabi a lot.
Oh, yeah. Me too.
So to kind of multiply off the nigiri. And then, after that, I don't know. I get screwed a lot on the tempura and the sashimi.
Oh, you'll get 2 out of 3.
Yeah, I have 2, not 3, or 1, not 2 with the tempura. So that sucks. So generally, after the wasabi and nigiri combo, I go for the maki and try to win the majority of that.
Yeah, I feel like I always get stuck with a chopstick in my hand as the last card.
Yeah, I always love doing that to people.
Yeah, so basically chopsticks are, if you're listening and you've never played before, if you get the chopstick card and you play it early enough, then your next hand you can take 2 of the cards. So it's kind of like a bonus, you know, like just kind of save it for when you want 2 cards. So, of course, if you get it last, it's totally worthless, you know, so and it's not worth any points or anything. So Sushi Go is a lot of fun. And, Glenn, you can get that from pretty much anywhere. They sell it at Target, Walmart. You know, it's easy to find. It's cheap, too. I want to say like $10 maybe, something
like
that.
Yeah, about $10. Yeah.
Cheap, easy to learn, quick to play, perfect game. So, well, not the perfect game, but perfect game to just pick up if you're saying, I want to find a new game. So, and who makes Sushi Go, Chad? Do you know? Is it Playwright?
Yeah, Playwright. Yeah,
Playwright Games, they got a lot of fun games. So, all right. Well, Chad, why don't you give us your number 8?
Oh, my number 8 is kind of in the same arena as Werewolf, which I said I didn't have Werewolf or Game Right. I'm sorry, did I say Playwright? Game Right.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I said Playwright, and you agree with me.
But my number 8's in the same arena as Werewolf, but it's called The Resistance. It's in the social deduction arena. Have y'all, either of you two, ever played it?
This one I've never even heard of, to be
honest.
I will address this game at a later time.
Oh, nice. All excellent. Right. So, real quickly, the Resistance is... I'll just talk about it when Glenn talks about it. That'd be good.
Okay. I like how you called it the what was the word you used? Deduction-based arena?
Social deduction.
Social arena. Deduction arena.
Yes.
I want to. My new goal in life is to get filthy rich, buy an arena, buy a stadium, and rename it the Social Deduction Arena. That'll be so much fun. So, all right, cool. So the Resistance gets some points, and we'll find out later exactly how many points it has and exactly what that game is. So, Glenn, why don't you keep things going and give us your number 8 and finish off that number on the list?
My number 8 is kind of an entry-level game for this sort of tabletop trend that's been going in recent years. It's Carcassonne.
Yep.
Okay.
It's, like I said, kind of an entry-level game. It's something that's very good to introduce people to tile-laying, land-building, geography-building games. The value of meeples. I love meeples in all their forms. and again, just the basics of tile laying and creating territories, messing with other people's territories as well.
I'm going to have to admit, I know this game. I've seen this game many times. I don't own it, and I've never played it.
Yeah. I mean, for me, this one is kind of one of those where you look at the box, you're kind of like, eh. But it's a fun game. It did kind of create the meeple, so it has that going for it. and I would put this at, like, the popularity level of, like, a Seven Wonders. So, I mean, you know, in the, what we phrase designer board games is what we're going with. That kind of genre, this is up there as far as the heavy hitters sale-wise. I would say below a Pandemic, but kind of like a tier below that. Okay. And to me, this is kind of what I call a Sunday afternoon type game, where it's pretty leisurely. I don't find myself, you know, thinking about it a lot. You know, you still want to win, but it's about 30 minutes probably to play, 20 to 30 minutes. Kind of has a nice leisurely pace where you're laying out tiles, connecting the roads and stuff like that. And I like also about this game that I think it ramps up well with player count. So it's something fun to play with your partner or wife. And then you can also play with four fairly easily in about the same amount of time. So this is another kind of enjoyable game where I wouldn't classify it as a filler. But if you're kind of planning out a game night and you may want to start with something that has some weight to it, but you know, you don't want to kind of blow people's minds right out of the game. This wouldn't be a bad one to start with.
That's a very good way to describe it. It's a very good first game for the day, because sometimes with tile laying games, you can get some amount of decision fatigue.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
And with Carcassonne, like you say, it is very casual, even though it has those sorts of decisions that you have to make. It doesn't have the sense that you have to, like, think over all of the variations of every decision, because it's going to determine exactly how many points you have. Oh, no. So it is a lot more casual, a lot better for opening up a day.
Awesome. Cool. Well, then I'm going to have to give that one a try. And someone mentioned box art. And I will say that it does play a factor sometimes in choosing a game, because if I remember, the box art for this one is absolutely nothing special. It almost looks dated, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's got kind of that blue background, and just sort of a, you know, it's kind of a joke among the community, but, you know, just like a white guy from the Mediterranean or whatever.
That's it. Yeah, and a castle.
Hanging out. Yeah.
Very, very plain. My number 7, which when we get there, I'll talk about it, but box art played a big part in my choosing to give it a try. So, all right. So it's Carcassonne?
Yeah, Carcassonne.
All right. So it's not Carcass 1.
No.
So, all right, cool. I'm going to have to try that one out, because Sunday afternoons are when we play a lot of our games. So a Sunday afternoon game sounds good. Let's keep things going. Go under our number 7. Chad, why don't you give us your number 7?
Number 7 is a game I love the box art on. It's Dead of Winter. It was produced by Plat Hat Games 2014, I'm pretty sure. Mm-hmm. And this was kind of one of the hype games that came out in 2014. And I love this game. You're kind of trying to – it's got co-op, a co-op vibe to it, mm-hmm. where you're trying to eradicate the zombies, but you have to search different kind of areas in the town. You each have a couple characters, and that's one thing I love about the game is the characters are pretty unique, where you can be the accountant, you can be the teacher, you can be the fireman, and they all have a special skill that sort of fits to their character. And then kind of there's two added wrinkles that make the game even better is there's a good chance somebody's a betrayer. Hmm. Among your group, but each person you get the card at the beginning of the game that says your objectives, and so for you to win the game you have to meet your personal objectives or else you don't win. And even if you're not the betrayer, your objective is probably going to be something selfish that makes you look a little suspicious over the course of the game. So I think that does a really good job of, if you are the betrayer, you're kind of hidden by that shield of, oh, you know, this guy over here, he did something fishy there, you know, where he just may have to have four gas cards is like his objective. So he has to hoard gas cards. And I think that's a really cool thing. And then the other thing this game sort of introduced was something called Crossroads. They call it a system. And it's not by Cody Rhodes, but
are you sure?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. but this is really neat in that every time you take a turn, the person to I can't remember if it's the right or the left, but one of those people draws a card
To the right, I think.
Yeah, to the right, and if you do a specific action that it speaks of on that card, the game just sort of stops. And then you have to do what the Crossroads card says, which is you usually have to make a pretty crummy decision to kill one of your characters or to, you know, do something pretty dastardly. And I think that just can sort of like turn the game up on its head. So this is one that now this is one I would consider kind of meaty. I'd say that they do have objectives that they classify as easy, medium, or hard. But even the easy objectives, I'd say you're in for a good, you know, 60 to 75 minute game.
Awesome.
And it is one you're probably thinking pretty heavily on. Also, I would say this game has, you know, this is an adult themed game. Mm-hmm. With some of the vocabulary on the cards and stuff like that. So keep that in mind, you know, the graphic design of it. But it's one I've really kind of taken to, and I love it of that kind of, it's co-op, but there's a betrayer among us. This is my personal favorite.
Awesome. Yeah, I have not played this one, but I know just from the comments that, Glenn, obviously you have. Do you want to talk about it now?
Yeah, that was actually one of my honorable mentions.
Cool, okay.
It just fell off my list as I was making it up earlier today, but... of all the zombie games that I've played, and with the zombie craze in popular culture over the last several years, uh-huh. there are sure. many. But of the zombie games that I've played, this is definitely my favorite. I do like all the varied characters, Chad, that you were just talking about. Have you ever been the dog?
So if we get to pick our characters, my sister-in-law insists on being the dog.
I love the dog so much. He's such a good boy.
I usually am the accountant just to sort of be lame and kind of art imitates life there. But
I don't remember which character I was. Might have been the accountant, might have been the... is there a driver of some sort? But one time I got hit by the Crossroads card that I think I was the janitor, actually. Yeah. That said that I was the dirty boy. You know, that I was like hoarding
the dirty white boy Tony Anthony?
Yeah, that I was hoarding filth in the place where all the survivors were gathering around, and so everyone had to take a vote on whether to evict me for making the place dirty.
You know, if it is the janitor that's the dirty boy, like the dirty white boy, that's kind of brilliant because, you know, T.L. Hopper is the kind of goes full circle
yes,
there.
Yes, exactly.
I got to tell you, while you guys are talking, I'm looking at this. This game looks awesome, just the pictures and stuff like that. Lots of dice, lots of stuff.
Oh, yeah, lots of pieces. Definitely.
Yeah, you have to roll your dice and decide how to allocate those.
Mm-hmm.
It's a complex. I would say it's a pretty complex game, but
yeah, I mean, we've been talking about game scheduling a little bit. This is definitely a midday game. I'd say like right before dinner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Because by the time you finish, you need a break.
Yes,
mm-hmm. Let's eat something.
To me, this is the one where like. This is kind of like your main event, quote unquote, of the day, where if you're playing this one in a regular game day, we're probably not going to play anything else as thinky or as hard or complex.
Cool. I'm going to have to give that one a try. So, and there is a, just from Google, it looks like there's a, is it an expansion, a follow-up?
Yeah, it just came out this year at Gen Con. It's called The Long Night. Yeah. It's basically a standalone expansion, but you can also combine, you know, so you can buy that on its own. Yeah, they said they were going to take that Crossroads system and use it for different themes, like space was supposed to be the next one. But I think the Dead of Winter was so successful that they kind of just decided to do the sequel right out of the gate. Sure. Yeah, but I'm looking forward to I do hope they use that Crossroads card system with another theme like space. I think that'd be really neat.
Cool. My number 7 is Hoarding Filth. No.
It's my everyday.
Glenn, why don't you give us your number 7 for real?
My number 7 is one that I think I've mentioned to you guys before a couple of times. That's Machi Koro.
Yes.
That's another adorable game. Like, the graphic design is a little cartoony, but not seriously childish. I think it would still be family-friendly, though.
It is, yeah.
You're building cities, and you're choosing which buildings to get that give you certain abilities. You might, you know, get extra money from other players. You might get extra money based on your dice rolls. And the goal is to build a series of specific buildings that even the order in which you build those lets you do certain things at certain times. And so there's enough variation that different people are trying different strategies, but it's still really integrated.
Yeah, I have Machi Koro. I don't have the second one that I've just seen popping up in stores here and there. I don't have that one yet. But, yeah, it's family-friendly in the sense that, you know, first of all, it looks kind of like Sushi Go, which is kind of what drew my eye. So it's – how would I describe this? Strategy – there's strategy to it, but you don't have to be, like, brilliant to be able to be good at it. You know, sometimes these games are so strategy-heavy that – you know, someone who that's not just really how their brain works is just going to check out and be like, I don't like this game at all.
Right.
Whereas this is a game that really anybody could win.
Yeah, again, it's something where you can avoid decision fatigue.
Exactly. Yeah, it's more fun and not goofy, but just fun. You know, it's, the spirit of enjoyment is there. And yeah, I definitely have that game. Chad, what do you think about Machi Koro?
Yeah, I think it's a good, fun game. The only reason, like, it wouldn't kind of be in a list like this for me is I sometimes think it's a little, I guess, you know, it usually goes about 30 minutes. And at that length of time, just kind of in our group, it's either we want to do something super light, like Sushi Go or something a little more complex. So it kind of gets angled out that way. But yeah, I've played this one a few times and I've enjoyed it every time. It's one of those where I may not necessarily jump to it and recommend it, but every time I do it, I have a good time playing it. So
yeah, and there is a second version out. I don't know what it's called. It's got a gold box and I don't know what the difference is. So I haven't played it, so I don't even know why I'm bringing it up. But you know, if you're a fan, there's another one out there. So
I think there's one exclusively to Target, too.
That's where I've seen it, so that must be it.
Okay.
Yeah. Target is where I go for a lot of my games, even though they don't really have much of a selection. We actually have a local hobby shop that has an extensive section of games to the point where some of them are $120. I'm like, this looks great, but I'm not going to spend that much money on something I've never played before.
Oof.
You know, what they need to do is they have this big back room where they play like mostly like Magic the Gathering and things like that. Mm-hmm. You need to rent time and rent the games out. You know, like, let us play this game, and if we like it, we'll buy it, and our rental time is to our purchase, you know. But I understand why they couldn't, because, you know, pieces would get broken or lost or stuff like that. But I just have trouble dropping that much money on something that just looks cool. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So, all right, let me finish off on number sevens. And this is one that I first picked up solely because of the box. I just thought it was really cool looking. But the game itself is actually pretty fun, and I've played it a good amount of times. My son is really good at it. He always seems to win. It's King of Tokyo. And King of Tokyo and King of New York, but this is King of Tokyo specifically. Basically, you are a monster, and you have to destroy Tokyo and kill the other monsters. And it's simple, but there is some strategy to it. It's fun. You know, you can buy these cards, use your energy to buy these cards that give you bonuses and or maybe penalize other players or things like that. It's kind of more dice-based. You got to roll the dice almost like a Yahtzee thing. You get three rolls and you choose which ones you want to keep, whether it's an attack or get some health back or things like that. But you have to conquer Tokyo, and if you're in Tokyo, you're susceptible to damage, but you can hurt everybody else, so you can kind of choose whether you want to stay there or not, or put somebody else there so you can heal up. And just a fun, simple game, but I think really what makes it, you know, from a basic game to a cool game is it's one of the coolest looking games. You know, the player pieces are pretty big, and each one is a different unique monster, and the Tokyo board is really cool. Every card that you can buy, like superpower or whatever, really cool art to it and stuff like that. So King of Tokyo is on my list at number seven. It's a fun game that you can play pretty easily, have a lot of fun with, but you know, it's not gonna fry your brain playing it either. So what do you guys think? Have you played King of Tokyo, you fans? Chad, how about you first?
King of Tokyo is my number 11.
Okay.
And actually, kind of one thing that I was mentioning with Machikoro, so King of Tokyo is one of those games that we sort of always seem to pick over like a Machikoro.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like, so if we're looking for that type of vibe, we're like, yeah, let's go with King of Tokyo if we're deciding. There should be a podcast coming out between me and my wife, where she runs down her top 10 games.
Cool.
And just a spoiler, you'll hear some King of Tokyo discussion on that as well. But yeah, love it. Fun game. This is one that's really gotten over well with the lunch group at work for me.
Yeah, you can play it on a lunch break perfectly.
Yeah, yeah. It's just, it hits that kind of sweet spot of 25 minutes or so. Another game I'm not very good at because I stay in Tokyo too long. Yep. And end up dying. But, yep.
If you stay in there long enough, you get bonus points. You know,
right,
it's kind of
right.
Like, do I leave or can I survive two more attacks? I don't know.
Yeah, you know? That push your luck. I always overshoot it. But yep. Yeah, I love King of Tokyo, and it does player elimination. I think I kind of talked about that in Werewolf, where, like, you know, Werewolf, if you die the first night, you're kind of sitting around for maybe an hour or mm-hmm. so. You know, King of Tokyo, it goes so quickly that even if you get eliminated fairly early, it doesn't feel like, oh, well, I'm just sitting around and watching these guys play a game, you know?
Right, yeah.
So,
because I feel like once one person's eliminated, the game really starts rolling.
It speeds
quick.
Up, yeah. So. Yeah. Not too long. I'd say 5-10 minutes max.
Sure. Glenn, have you played King of Tokyo yet?
I've played it once a few years ago. It was quick and a ton of fun.
Yeah. Now, King of New York is kind of like the follow-up to it, and it's bigger. There's more monsters. There's more stuff to do. But I almost feel like they tried to expand a little too much, and I prefer King of Tokyo still.
Definitely prefer King of Tokyo for me.
So
New York's a little too gamey, actually.
Yep. I'm not a fan of like the little you know, you can attack the hospital or
right, destroy the boroughs. Yeah, there's more geography area there. Yeah, and they just came out with a new second edition of King of Tokyo.
Yeah, with a newer box and stuff. I saw that.
Right, right. New monsters and stuff. I haven't looked at it, but it looks good. So.
Cool, yeah. But it's a lot of fun. And if you're listening and you're saying, which one should I play? King of Tokyo, I think, is a smaller game, but I think it's a funner game than King of New York. So
yeah, I would go King of Tokyo.
Yeah,
I think King of Tokyo is sort of, I feel like that's sort of been vetted out, even of the you know, the hardcore gamers or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Pretty much decided that King of Tokyo won that battle between the two.
Cool. So let's keep things going. Go into our number six now. And I'll tell you what, man. I think more than any list we've ever done on this show, we are not seeing very much overlap at all. So I'm thinking like the number three finalist might have like 7 points. So, but Glenn, start us off with your number six.
My number six has a little bit of overlap. You mentioned it a few minutes ago, and that's Pandemic.
Oh, cool.
This is one which I remember vividly when a couple of friends of mine bought this game because we were trying it out. It might have been like after another game day when I was the last one still at their house, and we decided to try it out because they'd just gotten it. I might have been there for some other reason, but I remember we were trying it out, so we weren't super strict about the rules. And we encountered one losing condition, like, pretty early on, and then decided, no, we're just trying it out. Let's keep going to see some of the other mechanics in the game. And then we hit another losing condition, and we figured, God, we haven't seen very much of it yet. And then we hit another losing condition, and we're like, okay, this is it. We're done. We're not getting anything done here. it is very easy to doom the entire human race, and yeah. I have done so many, many times.
Oh, yeah.
It seemed like at some point we, like, breached the event horizon and started winning sometimes, and our group collectively got pretty good at winning with some regularity, not all the time, but some regularity. I think it helped, actually, to have a larger group because we had more people with different abilities. And so we had, you know, a lot of the different specialists with their different abilities to countervene some of the restrictions in the game in their cases. And so that helped a lot. But, God, we've killed the human race so, so many times. Can I get to Sao Paulo? Possibly.
Yeah, like I said, I've only played it a couple times, and so I haven't won yet. But it's one of those games where it's like you come so close and you think, we're going to do this.
Yeah, and then the deck, like, runs out.
Yeah, well, and then run out of cards and you're like, ah, crap, man. So,
or you have to shuffle all of the cards that you just infected again and then infect them again.
Yeah, I look forward to the day where I finally save all of humanity and then promptly never play the game again because I've conquered it and it is now mine. So, but it hasn't happened yet. So, Chad, I know you said you're going to talk about Pandemic a little bit later on, correct?
Yeah, I'll hold off a little bit later.
All right, so that's going to be up there. So, all right, well, I'll give you my number six then. And we're going to go back in time a little bit, go a little bit older with a party game like Chad started off our list with. And it's a party game that – and let me explain this. When I was a kid – my parents would have game nights a lot, and Trivia Pursuit was like the go-to. And I liked it. You know, I'd sit and listen to it. I was a kid, so I wasn't very good at it, but I always liked trivia games. But the tough thing with trivia games is if you're not good at trivia, you don't like trivia games, you know? As a young adult, I would try to play games with friends, and, you know, there wasn't a lot of stuff that people were interested in. And then we found a game called Cranium, and Cranium kind of solved that problem, where it's still sort of a trivia game, but there's a whole lot of other things you can do. Cranium is basically your simple, basic board game, move around the board and win. But in order to do it, you have to be decent at trivia. You have to be able to do some puzzles. You have to be able to draw or sculpt in some cases. You can do some charades or singing. And it just kind of takes pretty much every famous classic party game and throws them all into a blender. So, you know, if you have a teammate that's really good at one aspect, you're good to go. It's just a really fun game. It's a really fun group party game. It's a really fun guys versus girls game or couples games or something like that. And I've played it many, many, many times, and I almost overlooked it. And I was trying to think of some older games to put on my list, and that was one where I'm like, wow, how did I forget Cranium? I haven't played it in a long time because I feel like I play different style of games now. But for its time, I really loved Cranium. And if we played it again, you know, tomorrow night, I'm sure I would enjoy it too. So I don't know that it made either of your guys' list, but I'm sure you probably know Cranium. So what do you guys think of Cranium?
I can go quick. I know of it. I don't think I've ever played it, actually.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I am in the exact same boat.
Wow. Okay. Well, you guys have to give it a try. And there's a whole lot of different versions. There's quicker versions and things like that. And here's another thing I wanted to bring up with Cranium. I recently saw this, and I want to see what you guys think of this newer phenomenon. The latest version I saw is called Cranium After Dark. And it's kind of like they've adultified Cranium. And it seems like they're doing this now with a lot of games. Like, and it's kind of like the gaming world's response to Cards Against Humanity's success, I guess. Like,
yeah.
Hey, let's make ours dirty, you know? Like, and here's my simple response to that. If your brain works that way, you can make any game dirty without having to buy the dirty version. You know, like, I was reading the back of Cranium After Dark, and it was like, you have to, by charades, imitate that you are milking a cow as a zombie. So, of course, you know, you're making that motion while groaning. Ha, ha, ha. You know? And I'm like, well, you can do that on your own. Because we've had many of nights where the games have gone quite off the rails into that area. And you don't have to buy the 18 and up version to make the game 18 and up, do you?
So. Yeah, I mean, Codenames, I guess, is the other big one. That's another Target exclusive is Codenames After Dark or whatever. Is,
yeah. Mm-hmm. So.
My goodness, J-Rev, are you going blue?
I might be. So it depends on who's listening. So. But, you know, I mean, I haven't played Cranium After Dark. I'm not sure what it would ask me to sculpt with modeling clay.
Oh, God.
Man.
But I'm not sure I can do it in 30 seconds or not. So.
Yeah, I mean, I generally agree with you that, like, I mean, certainly with regular Codenames, if you want to take it in that way, sure. You can. And I think if you want to play that game, I mean, that type of game, it feels like, I mean, Cards Against Humanity is such the go-to
right.
That
yeah.
It's kind of like if it's not broke, you know.
Right. Well, like there's a game that we used to have called The Game of Things, and it's like you get the card, and everyone kind of writes their answer, and you read them aloud, and you kind of I think that you have to guess who said what. And they came out with like the adult Game of Things, and I'm like, listen, we made that game adult a long time ago. You know, when it's fill in the blank, you don't need it to be the adult version. Right. So, but yeah, Cranium's a cool game. I'm surprised you guys have never played that one. I would suggest just the basic Cranium. And what's cool about it is, you know, you get into different sections. So the first section is, you know, charades, or it's called Humdinger, where you like hum a song or something. Second section is your like Pictionary drawing, sculpting type thing. Then you got your trivia. Then you got your puzzles. And it's different type of puzzles, like word puzzles that you can look at. You got to spell words backwards as a team. So, like, I would say the first letter, then Glenn, then Chad, then back to me. And if you screw up even once, you lose. But what's kind of cool is when you get to each section, the first time you do it, if you get it right, you do the fast track. So there's only, like, four spaces on the board you got to go through. Whereas if you get it wrong, you got to do the long track, and it's, like, 12 spaces you got to get through to the next section. So it's a pretty cool little game. A lot of fun, and worth a look, and it's probably pretty cheap now because it's been out for so long. So, Chad, why don't you finish off the top half of our list before we go to break and give us your number six?
My number six, the first iteration of the game came out in 1979.
Wow.
So it's an old one, and it's Cosmic Encounter, which I have the 2008 version. It's essentially a negotiation game. And it can be a little – this is one where when I told Jennifer we were playing Cosmic Encounter, she kind of groaned, where I was like, you know, you're gonna take an alien race and play. But essentially in Cosmic Encounter, you are trying to get your ships on other people's planets, and you have a character card, and it's really made by the character cards where you have your own special power, and they all feel – very unique and very powerful, and it's very interesting how they interact with each other. And I really enjoyed the negotiation aspect of the game because, you know, you can be in a fellowship with someone the whole game and then screw them at the end and win individually.
Awesome.
Or you can really create kind of these alliances quick and fast throughout the game, and based on how well they benefit you, you can blow them off and kind of bury them all in one game. So it's a fun game. It can be a game where you leave a little pissed off at the end of it. I've had a couple of games of it where I've been you know, straight lied to and felt pretty bad about it at the end of it. Held a little bit of a grudge, but I think in that type of genre, that's sort of like the telltale sign of a good game, where I'm that invested enough sure. in a way. And again, I love the alien races. Like, there's so many like cool alien races where so in the game you are kind of in a head-to-head combat with somebody else, and you lay down cards. So like most games, the cards are the highest number wins, mm-hmm. and you can have allies on each side that help people out. But there's this one character I love playing with that's called like the antimatter, and his thing is like now the lowest number wins, and it's just such like a mind warp for. I mean, there's so many cards like that. There's another power where you reverse the number, so now all of a sudden an 18, which is a decent number card but not that great, turns into 81. So there's so many characters. They have like over. There's been 5 expansions. The latest version came out in 2008 from Fantasy Flight, and just the base version has, I think, 30 or 40 aliens. So plenty just in that. And then there's been 5 expansions of about 20 aliens apiece. So you're well over like 125-150 aliens in the game so far. So ton of playability.
Wow, Glenn, have you ever heard of this game? Because I haven't.
I haven't heard of that specifically. I might have played something inspired by it. Okay. That sounds likely since it's been out for so long. But that particular one, no.
Yeah, I've never even heard of this game. So, and it's kind of cool to think that, you know, when you said 1979, Chad?
Yeah, yeah.
That they had those character-based games like that. Because, you know, when you think of games like from when I was growing up, and it was like your very basic, you know, board games. So it's kind of cool that games like this have been around that long, and maybe we've just been missing the boat on some of them. So, but no, I've never heard of that one.
Yeah. And kind of my nerdy claim to fame with this is Tom Vassell, who runs the Dice Tower, which I would say that's like the Dave Meltzer of board games. Their YouTube. This is his number one game of all time.
All right. So I mean, you could have just said your nerdy claim to fame is knowing what the Dice Tower is. It probably would be good enough. So, let alone what the top game on it is. So, all right. Well, that's a cool way to end our first half. You know, if you're still listening with us, you know, hopefully you're nodding and agree with some games. And if you're like me, you're jotting down the names of some of the ones you've never played. Stick around. When we come back, we know we're going to talk about Pandemic. We know we're going to talk about The Resistance. And what else are we going to talk about? You're going to have to tune in and find out. But first, listen to these wonderful commercials.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you're subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Just head to iTunes today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be podcast feed, the PWO PTBN feed, PTBN Pop, and of course the Kevin Kelly Show feed, which includes the full archives of my podcasts. Some really great stuff. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. Thanks for being a fan of professional wrestling. More importantly, thanks for being a fan and supporter of the Place to Be Nation.
Place to Be Nation is JT Rizzero here. In addition to the archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on 2 great feeds. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. All of this in addition to Scott Keith's Podcast of Doom, which includes discussions on questions from listeners as well as current day and old school wrestling. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows are available on PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the pro wrestling only Place to Be Nation podcast network. That's the PWO PTBN podcast network, where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickenspan, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the reaction shows with Good Old Will from Texas. We've got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Teams Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course, there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
Welcome back. Hopefully you just finished up your last round of Cosmic Encounter, and the antimatter ruined everything for you. Did I get that right? Was it antimatter, anti-monitor?
Antimatter.
Antimatter. All right. Anti-monitor. That might be like a Green Lantern villain. We'll have to get Greg Phillips on the case to help us out there. So,
oh boy.
Yeah. All right, guys. We are talking and counting down our top 10 tabletop games. I got Glenn Butler and Chad Campbell joining in with me. And we are halfway through our list. Before we get into our number fives, we're going to take some time to list some honorable mentions, some stuff that maybe just missed the cut. Chad, I know you said you had one that you'd want to list.
Yeah, this is just a real quickie. It's called Spyfall. And Spyfall is another kind of social deduction, but a really basic concept. One person's the spy. Everybody else is in a location. So like the hospital, the beach, an amusement park, a submarine, etc. And the spy's trying to figure out where everybody else is at, and everybody else is trying to figure out who the spy is. So you do that by asking questions like, what are you wearing at this place? Or how many times would you go to this place in a year? It's an open-ended question. So it's a really fun game. Can create some great moments, like one, I think one's like an Arctic station or something like that. And at one point we asked the spy how he got there, and he said he walked. So that was kind of a tip off that he probably was the spy.
That's good stuff.
Yeah, or you're at a you're at the beach and somebody says they're wearing business attire, or stuff like that. It could create some. It's very stressful if you're the spy.
I'm going to use that to call some people up and be like, "What are you wearing? I'm the spy."
Yeah. I like it because you can be very creative with your questions, like what movie does this place remind you of, or inside jokes and stuff. I mean, it's kind of up to you how creative you are, but you don't want to tip it off to the spy, because if the spy guessed or figures out where you're at, you lose. Gotcha. And the rounds, each round takes like 5-6 minutes, so real quick. Pretty cheap game. It's like $15, and you get like 30 locations. Cool. So this is another one of those kind of end of night games that we pull out and play a couple rounds of.
Yeah, I got one cheap one too that's fun, mindless. It's a card game, and it's called Poo, and that's P-O-O. And have you played that one?
No.
Poo is basically all the cards have like different monkeys on them, and you fling poo at each other. And, different types of poo. It's very the definition of toilet humor, different types of poo, like pellets or things like that. And, if I hit Glenn with like a pellet poo, that might be 2 points that he has to take on. And once someone's up to like 15 points, they're out of the game. But you can like wash yourself off with cards or things like that. And it's basically just monkeys throwing poop at each other. And it's as dumb as it sounds, but it's actually pretty fun. And there is some strategy to it. You know, a lot of times when we play, we gang up on somebody. And, you know, that can come back to haunt you because the first person eliminated – actually, the first two eliminations get to use the golden banana, which brings them back into the game. You know, with like half their life restored. So it's kind of like everyone gangs up on somebody. He comes back into the game and, you know, goes off on everybody. So – and then there's one cool card that comes into play sometimes. It's a game where sometimes no one wins because if you have a card called the Blaze of Glory, when you are eliminated, every card in your hand gets played. So we've had it happen before where, you know, there's down to three people. We're all near death, and the person eliminated had the Blaze of Glory, and everybody dies. So fun little game. Pretty simple.
Speaking of special guests, I think we need to get Tim Capel to discuss that one.
Yeah, the Dark Passenger. So, well, let me ask you this. Glenn, did you have any honorable mentions?
I had a couple I wanted to mention. First, you mentioned video board games earlier. Mm-hmm. There was one for Star Trek The Next Generation, which mm-hmm. I never played and never had, but when YouTube started up in the big YouTube era of, 10 years ago or so, I encountered this rip of the VHS tape that came with that game featuring awesome, Robert O'Reilly, who played Chancellor Gowron on the TV show, who was one of the greatest character actors in that show. He was just incredibly idiosyncratic, incredibly emotive. His eyes bug out the most of any actor I've ever seen, and he was chewing up the scenery for the TV show in this stupid, stupid video. Like, so often, like, you can't refer to, like, Player One or Player Two because you don't know who it's going to refer to, so all of his messages would start, "You! The one who is moving now! Move back!" All of these little messages to the players, it's fantastic just as a video. I've seen it pop up on so many social media sites as a curio, a curiosity, so shout out to that game. Also, another quick card-based game, like you were talking about your poo, one that I rather like is Chrononauts. A game about time travel where all of the people playing are time travelers and each person has an individual goal to make a certain timeline happen. Like, you lay out a field of cards that you can flip or add cards to that represent historical events, like the sinking of the Titanic or the end of World War II or the Kennedy assassination. And by playing cards during the game, you change these events. And so if you make a certain timeline come to be where, like, you save the Titanic and you save John Kennedy, that might be somebody else's winning condition.
Oh, okay.
And so it's one that someone can win at any time, but you're all trying to get to your individual goal.
And you could accidentally lose.
Yeah, you can, but changing all these events and all the different things you can change are really, really fun. It's easy to add expansions to. I know there's one that I haven't played yet called The Gore Years.
Is that about Rhino or Al Gore?
it's about changing history to bring about the administration of President Gore.
Oh, okay.
Which
I still don't know if that's about Rhino or Al Gore, though.
Well, let your imagination carry you. It's also something that I believe was either ripped off entirely or the people who made the game just printed a Back to the Future version, which makes enough sense, obviously.
Sure.
There might be other expansions, too, or other expansions coming, but it's very easy to add those and really fun to change all these things.
Yeah, that sounds fun. Yeah, I've never heard of that one, but that sounds like a fun little easy...
It's easy and quick.
Cool. Yeah, and so is Pooh, you know, and the card game Pooh as well.
I hope, yeah.
So those are some games you can check out. Didn't make any of our top tens, but maybe it'll be at the top of your list and... hopefully you have a lot of fun playing those games. Guys, I'm going to keep things going with our number five, and I'm going to keep things going also with a quick, simple card game. I went with a game called Exploding Kittens. for my number five. This game is tense, man. My son actually is the first one who got us playing this game, and he's like, "Dad, I want exploding kittens." I'm like, "What is wrong with you?" And you know, he explained it's a game that they played at school, and so I kind of wrote it off as a kids' game, you know, because the kids were playing it. And I think we got it for him for Christmas or something. I said, "All right, play, show me how this game works." And we played it, and it was a lot of fun. It's quick, it's simple. Basically, you just want to be the last one standing. There's enough bombs, you know, if there's five people playing, then four bombs are in the game or something like that. You play different cards, do different things. You can peek at the deck. You can defuse a bomb. You can trade cards, steal cards, do all kinds of things. You know, if you survive the bomb, you kind of reshuffle the deck however you want. So you can put it right at the top, right at the bottom. And last person standing wins, and you just hope that you don't blow up. Have you guys played Exploding Kittens? Glenn, how about you?
I have played it before. It's a ton of fun. Yeah,
yeah, and you know, it's another. You can download it on your phone too. You don't play against your friends, but you can just play it against. I don't know if it's just computer generated or other people in real time, but pretty simple game. Chad, how about you, man?
Never played Exploding Kittens, but I think that's this is kind of one of the Kickstarter like gems.
Oh yeah,
you know,
definitely.
Certainly mm-hmm. know about it. Made millions of dollars just yeah. sort of from a simple game.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks like a, you know, a good kind of filler to fit that vibe of just I don't know of anyone in kind of my group that has it, but yeah, I wouldn't be adverse to play it or anything.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of I think it's faster than Sushi Go is. Similar style in that it's just cards and you're playing, but you can't really target anyone. You know, so you don't really gang up on people or things like that. And it gets tense because, you know, as the deck gets smaller and smaller, you know, if there's four cards left in the deck and there's three people playing, you know, three out of the four cards are bombs. And so you're basically sometimes it gets down to a point where you know you're about to lose and there's nothing you can do about it. And you're just frantically looking, you know, hoping for something you can find. But, you know, it's a fun game. It's pretty easy to learn. You can just pick it up and play it. And it's funny, not just fun. You know, if you read the cards, you know, different cards have different things and just some goofiness to it. So I was surprised it ranked as high as it did on my list. But as I was kind of reshuffling things, it just kept climbing a little bit and climbing a little bit. Couldn't crack any higher than the next four, but I feel like everything else on my list could kind of shuffle around depending on the day and stuff like that. So this one just happened to be fun as the time I was making this list. So that's my number five. Chad, how about yours?
My number five I alluded to a little bit earlier when I talked about a Clue kind of type game, mm-hmm. and that's Mystery of the Abbey. This came out from Days of Wonder in 2003. So, again, a kind of older game, but, I mean, it's essentially Clue in a lot of ways. You're trying to find out a monk that killed somebody in the abbey, and you got about 32 people, and they're different characteristics of each monk. There's different categories where one's a father, one's a novice, one's like a Templar, one's a Benedictine, stuff like that. And then they're fat, they're hooded, they're bearded. So you have all these characteristics, and you move around a board where each room you go into in the abbey allows you to do a certain action. But the thing I really like about this game is when you enter a room with another player, you get to ask them a question. And the question can be anything except the answer can't be a name of somebody. So you can't say, like, tell me a novice that you have marked off. But you can say, like, how many, you know, novice Benedictines do you have marked off? And if they say three, then you know, oh, okay, well, that it can't be one of those guys because you have to be truthful with the answer. Yeah. The other neat thing you can do is if you're the person that gets asked the question, you can take a vow of silence, which can be very strategic. And when you do that, because it could be a decoy, or you know, you could not be wanting to kind of show your cards. You know, if you're holding,
can you only
nuts,
do it once
so
in the game?
No, you can do that as many times as you want. But the kicker to that is, so if I ask you a question, Jordan, and you answer it truthfully, then you can ask me a question and I have to answer it. I cannot take the vow of silence.
Gotcha. Man. Okay.
But if I take the vow of silence, then I cannot ask you a question too. So it's one of those kind of, you know, you got to give me some information and I'll give you some information. Like if I give you nothing, I can't receive nothing in return. Just an excellent game. Again, I think it's, you know, almost everybody knows what Clue is, so it's really easy to explain. But it has some interesting strategy where you can, and you're also trading cards each round. So information is getting passed, and I love being able to hoard like one card of one guy, and then, you know, somebody thinks that's the killer, and they'll like proclaim him as the killer, and then I'm like, no, nope. actually I can prove you wrong because I've been holding this card for the whole game. It's an excellent game. I really love it. I actually think this one doesn't get talked about enough, kind of in the geek community. It, you know, as its fans, but I mean, I really think like this is kind of one of your, if somebody said like, what, you know, next step 10 game board games, you know, like I played Clue, I played Monopoly as a kid, what's 10 games I could buy as an adult, you know, type board games that I would really enjoy, this would be one I would point to right away. Cool. I think if you like Clue, I can't imagine you wouldn't like this one.
If you like Clue and you like fat bearded monks.
Right.
And boy do I.
Man, there's some big boys too. There's a Brother Fortune, and he's a hefty dude, boy. I don't know what type of murder he's carrying out, but he's definitely a fatty.
Well, that sounds fun. I've never heard of this one either. So Chad, you are really giving me some stuff to look into. So I'm looking at the last two on the list, and I kind of want to play the cosmic mystery of the Abbey. Fat-bearded monks in space. So one follow-up question. Now, Glenn, have you played this game or heard of this game? Or are you like me?
I'm going to take a vow of silence right now.
Now, you can't ask me anything, so all right. Is it like Clue in the sense that, you know, like Clue, you shuffle the cards and you put the things in the little envelope. You got to figure out what's in the envelope, or do you got to figure out what other people are?
Yeah, no, there's one card that's the killer, okay. And then you disperse the other cards to each person.
Got it, okay.
So, yeah, it's just like Clue where you have information at the beginning, you check off, and then throughout the rest of the game you find out more information, and then there's one killer. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah, because we've been playing a game recently. It's not really cards you pass around, but it's called Hoax, where it's sort of Clue themed, but instead of figuring out who the killer is, you got to figure out who everyone else is. So kind of a neat little twist. So I wasn't sure there. So I figured I'd ask. So, all right, cool. So Glenn, go ahead and give us your number five, man.
I will reverse my vow of silence at this time. My number five is Dixit, which is a game that I think is pretty interesting because it has larger cards that have drawings or paintings, some of them a little expressionist, some of them a little weird, of all different like art styles to an extent. And what happens is one player takes one of these cards from their hand and chooses a phrase to describe it. And all the other players choose a card, a picture from their hand that they think best fits that phrase. Hmm. And then all of those cards are shuffled up so you don't know which one the first player was actually describing. And then you have to, by placing your pieces, bet on which of the cards fits that phrase. And so if the person making the clue makes it too obvious and everyone chooses the right one, then that person loses points because they made it too obvious. Okay. If you make it too obscure and nobody gets it right, you also lose points for making it too obscure.
So you got to find that happy medium there.
Exactly. So that some people choose the right one, in which case they get points, and the people who choose the wrong one lose points, and the people whose cards were chosen, even though they weren't the right one, also get points because you chose a good enough card that made people think that it was the right one. And so there's some strategy in there, but there's also a lot of like genuine art in these different cards. and some imagination into trying to pick a good phrase to use. So those are all things that I really like as, again, kind of a midday game.
Cool. This is a game I've seen in the stores before, and I've kind of looked at the box, and I've never actually picked it up, played it. So it does sound pretty interesting. Chad, how about you? Have you played this one?
Yeah, just knowing Glenn's personality, this feels like a Glenn Butler game for sure. You know, I've mentioned this a couple times, but there's, you know, I mentioned a couple games I'm bad at, but I think the game I may be the absolute dirt worst at is Dixit. I am so bad at this game where every time I give a clue, everybody automatically knows which card is mine. I'm hideously bad at this game, but I think the art is beautiful. I mean, this is some of the card art for this game, and it has a lot of expansions as well.
It's stuff that,
I mean, some of the art you could hang in your house and it wouldn't look out of place at all. But yeah, I think the expansions help add a lot of playability to the game too.
Yeah, because of the concentration on the art, it's very, very easy to make expansions for. All you need is some more cards.
Yeah. So, you know, at first, the way you're describing it, it almost sounded like apples to apples to me. And then, as you kept describing it, it almost sounded like Balderdash to me. You know, like, so am I kind of thinking the right way there?
I'd say it kind of combines both those.
Yeah. But with pictures.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Cool. That sounds fun. I'll have to give that one a try as well. Man, I am going to spend a lot of money on games.
Yeah, that's another one that's super family friendly, too.
Yeah, so that's cool. And, you know, maybe I'll play with Chad so I can actually beat him at something. So, all right, Chad, that was our number five. That's Glenn's five. So let's keep rolling into our number fours. How's that sound? And Chad, start us off there, man.
Okay, my number four, which I probably should have made my number five. I just thought about this. is Five Tribes. Nice. This is by another game by Days of Wonder. Came out a couple of years ago, Bruno Cathala. So this game has a Mancala mechanic
to it. Okay.
Where you move around a board and you have to drop a meeple off at each location. And then at the end of the location, you have to end. There's different colored meeples and you have to end on a location where there's another, you know, a color matches one of the colors that's on the location. And then you pick those up and perform the action. And this is another one that I talked about kind of in Seven Wonders where there's a lot of things you can do in this game. You can go for the assassin where you kill other people's meeples. You can go for the, they call them viziers and elders, which get you points at the end of the game. There's a market of resources that you can go for. I usually try to go for that, where if you have all nine different resources, you get a ton of points at the end. Or you can also buy the, they call them the gins, which are, you know, these character cards that also perform an action. So there's a lot going on. This is another one I'd say is a medium to probably a medium weight game. This is a pretty hefty type game, and it is a game that you can be prone to analysis paralysis, which is just, you know, taking forever to make a decision, because this is one where you want to kind of map out and make sure you're doing the best case scenario for your move. But I think kind of my group, it doesn't lend to that, because we sort of just go with the decision and stick with it, even though it may not have been the best decision. But I can see how with a group with people that really kind of negotiate each choice very heavily, it could drag out a bit. But this is one I enjoy playing with Jennifer. I think it works well with two players. A lot, some people don't like it with two players because there's an auction at the very beginning of the round to decide who goes first. And some people don't like that with two players, the way that works, because you end up controlling two kind of characters or whatever. You go twice in one round. But I enjoy it a lot with two players, and enjoy it with three and four players too. And it's of kind of the medium meaty type games, this is the one I kind of always go towards, Five Tribes.
Cool. Glenn, have you played Five Tribes?
I have not. Actually, you said the name, and I discovered that I kind of mixed it up with another game. I was actually thinking of Small World until you got into describing the game.
Yep.
But I want to thank you very much, Chad, because every time I said decision fatigue before, the phrase I was frantically searching my mind for was analysis paralysis. So thank you for reminding me.
That's a good fantasy football team name as well.
Yeah.
Analysis paralysis. So. Yeah, this is another one that I haven't played, and so a lot of Chad's list is kind of – unfortunately, Chad, that means your games are not going to get that many points in our overall rankings. So, but, you know, it sounds fun, and when you first started off by talking about Mancala, I'm like, okay, my wife will play this with me because I think we all have that one game that, like, we just never win at. Chad, you said Dixit is yours. I don't think I've ever won a round of Mancala, which you would think – I mean, it's basically simple – you know, pick them up and drop them off, but I can't win that game to save my life. So might be worth trying, and that's a nice easy sell to my wife. Hey, you'll kill me at this. So Five Tribes sounds fun. Cool. Glenn, give us your number four.
My number four is one that Chad mentioned before. It's the Resistance.
All right.
This is another one that comes in a couple of different forms. The form that I've played it most often is called Avalon. Where the Resistance is kind of a near-future cyberpunk kind of thing. Avalon takes the same game mechanic and puts it in a medieval setting, a kind of an Arthurian setting, and adds a few people with, again, special abilities. You know, someone might be Merlin or something. But... especially in my typical game day group, where, like I said before, there's one person we always think is the traitor. this sort of game where there's one or more traitors kind of sabotaging the team missions is good for getting some healthy competition going and some healthy suspicion. If you have a friend group that you can have some healthy suspicion of.
Yeah, and if you don't, well, I mean, you aren't really that good of a friend. When you mentioned Avalon, I'm like, that kind of rung a bell with me, because I've got some friends who've been trying to get me to play Avalon with them for a while now, and I just haven't – I'm not averse to it. It's just kind of – it never seems to be there when we're actually playing games, you know, one of those things. Like, oh, we didn't bring it this time. So, all right, cool. So, Chad, you mentioned it, and then you said, okay, well, I'll talk about it later. So why don't you talk about it now?
Yeah, I love this game. I think if – I mean, you know, I know you like Big Brother, Jordan, so yeah. I think if you like the kind of the strategy aspect of Big Brother and stuff like that, I can't imagine you wouldn't like playing this game.
Cool.
Because it feels like that kind of condensed where, I mean, you have five missions, the bad guys want to fail the majority of them, and the good guys want to pass the majority of them, and it's a really kind of simple thing where you either have to vote, you know, yes or no, essentially, to pass or fail the mission. And if you're a good guy, you always have to vote yes. And if you're a bad guy, you can vote no, but you could also vote yes. So on, like, the first round, to throw everybody off the scent, you know, you can pass the mission, even if you're a bad guy and goes on the mission, to not create suspicion among yourself. And it's just just an amazing game that if you can hide low and come out at the end and really fool people that, you know, I mean, with my games that I've played, as I mentioned, it's family or friends. So these are people you know pretty intimately.
Sure.
And to kind of pull the wool over their eyes and trick them and to have a great kind of game plan going in, or if you smoke somebody out, I love that too. So the social deduction type genre has been very popular the past 3 or 4 years. I'd say since the Resistance came out, I think that kind of jump started it again, where Werewolf was always kind of the big kind of person in that type of arena, and now there's a lot of games that are marketed that way, but Resistance is the best for me. I actually like Resistance to Cyberpunk a little bit better than Avalon, but both of them I take over any other social deduction game, both versions.
Cool. All right, that's something I'm going to have to try. So Resistance is high on Glenn's list, on Chad's list, and I just haven't played it yet. So I'll finish off our number fours, and I'm going to go back to a party game. It's a newer one, and I actually just got it this year, and I played it a lot this past weekend. So maybe it's fresh in my mind and, you know, just some recency bias there. But it's called Concept. And Concept is a really interesting game in the sense that, you know, your typical party game, you draw the card and it's like, I don't know, Pinocchio or a phrase or a movie or something like that. And you can kind of pick what you want to go for, but you don't draw it. You don't act it out. Instead, what you do is you have a board full of pictures and arrows and colors and things like that. And you got a bowl full of little, you know, I guess blocks or beads, different colors. And you just place things on the board to try and get people to figure out what it is. So let's say I had Pinocchio I mentioned. So I would put my first bead on, you know, there's a one that is like a mermaid, something like that. So you can kind of know it's a fictional character. Or I could go with movie. And then you could put it on a piece of wood. So, you know, like a fictional character made of wood, you know. And it's really harder than it sounds. You know, it's one of those games you look at, you're like, oh, this is easy, I could do that. And then you do one, you're like, huh, what do I do? You know, and especially if you try the hard stuff on the card, it's really, really tricky, but it's actually really fun once you get going. We actually play it to the point where most of the time we play it, we don't even keep score. We just play it just to play it. But in terms of keeping score, if it's your turn to give the clues, if you know, you get a point, obviously, if somebody gets it right. So, you know, there's a benefit to being good at giving the clues as well as guessing the clues. So, Chad, I heard you make a sound when I mentioned Concept. I don't know if it was a positive or a negative one. What do you think of that one?
Yeah, I like Concept. And this will probably sound harsh, but I mean it as a compliment. But it's kind of a game that's not really a game. You know what I mean by that? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. I mean, we don't really. When we play Concept, we don't play to a specific point total or something like that.
Yeah, it's same just, here. Yeah.
You know, we just go around and play a couple of rounds of it. But it's a cool game to see how people's minds work and how you can deduct what they're trying to get you to guess by what they place the pieces out on the board. Really, really neat.
Yeah. And it's one of those ones, too, where, like, if you can kind of figure out part of it, you can easily get stuck on that, like, one little word that's not really in there. Like, we were playing this past week. My brother was playing with us, and he was trying to get us to guess the phrase, down the wrong hatch. And we just kept saying, down the hatch, over and over and over again. And he's just, like, giving us this look of death, like, you idiots. It's obviously not that. But, you know, your brain kind of gets stuck there, even though you've said it 60 times, you know. So that happens a lot, and it can be frustrating. But it's, like, rewarding when you finally figure it out. You're like, oh, yeah. And what's kind of cool about it is there's no timer. You know, it's kind of like you go until you decide, okay, no one's going to get this. So it's kind of on the person giving the clue. You can play with a timer, but there's no timer in the box or anything. And I think the rules actually say, you know, just go until it's clear they're not going to get it. So somebody can really drag out their turn, or somebody can just give up real quick. So, Glenn, have you played Concept?
No, I don't think I've heard of it before.
Yeah, I think it's fairly new, maybe like the last 2 years, Chad.
Yeah, 2013, I want to say.
Okay, 2000.
It was nominated for the Spiel des Jahres.
So oh, yeah. That's yeah. Exactly why I ranked it. I spilled a lot of jars over that game. But you know what's funny is I remember looking at the box and I was reading the exact same thing. It's got all these like nominations, but they're all like French. I'm like, cool. This is really big in Europe, I guess. So. But yeah, it's a – I don't want to say it's a simple game because I don't think it's simple. But it's a simple concept that's pretty hard in execution. So that's where I rank that, and that's the last of my straight-up party games. The rest of my list is kind of like my gold, my silver, my bronze. So let's get into that with everybody's. And Glenn, why don't you start us off with your number three, your bronze medalist here.
My bronze medalist is Flux.
Okay, and there's a ton of versions of this, correct?
Oh, yeah. So many different versions, so many different variations, so many expansions I think you can get to. It is a game where the rules are always in flux, and the cards that you draw are either objects that let you reach victory conditions, objects that block you from reaching victory conditions, or new rules that you can play that change the way everybody is playing the game. It can affect your hand size, how many cards you draw, how many cards you play, what the winning condition actually is that everyone is supposed to be going for at any given second. Everything is in flux.
Which really sucks if you're very close to winning and then the winning conditions get changed.
And someone changes it, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, very, very frustrating at times. The first game of Flux that I played was actually the Monty Python version, which which had one rule card that someone played, which said that if you do a funny accent until your next turn, you get to draw an extra card. And I immediately launched into my, like, half Queen's English, half Mrs. Doubtfire. You know, kind of,
And then people want to draw out their turns just so you have to keep talking like that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, there was one person sitting next to me who just like burst into laughter whenever I would say anything because I was always saying it like this. Oh, yes. And she was the one who played that rule, and so the play would have to go all the way around the table before it got back to me, and I finally got to draw that freaking card. But some of the goofy stuff like that is really great. In the Monty Python version, even more so, obviously. There's a space sci-fi version that I have that I've played a couple of times, too. Like I said, all different versions, and it's really fun to see all the little weird ways that you can change the game.
Yeah, this is a game... Man, I'm surprised I didn't think of this one. I don't really know why it didn't rank on my list. I guess just I haven't played it in a while, maybe? I don't know, because I enjoy it. Chad, have you played Flux?
I have never played Flux.
Wow, okay, yeah. There's a zombie one, I know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've never played the Monty Python, like Glenn mentioned. Gosh, what is that? I think the regular show, you know, the regular show on Cartoon Network, there's one of that. And so it's a good version of a game that a lot of times goes wrong. Like, you know, there's a lot of games out there where it's like, isn't this a wacky card? And the game itself is kind of like, not to just kind of go off on a tangent, but I picked up a game and it was called, like, We Didn't Play Test This Game at All.
Yep.
And I hated it, man. I was like, this is dumb. Like, and it's basically just like goofiness just to try and be goofy. And I didn't like it that much. I mean, and maybe it was just me because some of the other people that played it really enjoyed it. And there's another game, like, I think it's called Cow, that's like that. And this is like a really good version of those type of games in Flux. You know, and I don't know which ones came first. So maybe everyone's trying to imitate Flux. But if you like just some wackiness to your game, in terms of changing things around and doing silly stuff like that, I think it can be a lot of fun. So,
so you think they should have play tested a little, huh?
They really should have. You know, like, hey, like, I'm trying to think of what some of the cards were. One of them was like, okay, if we're playing in a group and I play my card, I say, okay, who wants a present? And you have to decide if you want a present or not. And the present could be like puppies and you all win the game, or it could be like poisonous snakes and anyone who takes it dies and is out of the game.
Hold on.
Yeah, so that was my...
Sami Zayn making a run.
Yeah, no, that was my alarm. I have to switch the laundry before I go to bed tonight so my wife has a towel to shower with in the morning. So, sorry, I thought that was on mute, fellas.
Although I don't know if anyone is going to make a run-in on a board game podcast. Wouldn't it be Sammy?
Yeah, I could say that. Yeah, I
could say that. I heard someone mention Flux. That was my Sammy Zayn person, by the way. So,
very nice, very nice.
Yeah, thanks. So I'm really working my French-Canadian
there. Next to your Mrs. Doubtfire.
Hello! Not quite as good as yours.
No.
So, all right, so that's a pretty cool one, and that makes me want to play it again. So I don't know if I have that game. I don't think I have it. I think I've played it with other people. So, all right, I will go ahead and give my number three, and it is Ticket to Ride. And there's another game where there's several versions, and I just kind of lump them all together. Ticket to Ride is a game that's one of those ones that's kind of crossed over into mainstream. You can find it, you know, at your – I seem to keep mentioning Target, but I feel like if it's there, you know, everyone's heard of it or seen it. Basically, you get the board is a map. The main version is the United States, and you got to make trains, and you've got to connect from city to city. You know, you get your different colored trains. You can draw cards: blue, red, yellow, orange, different things like that, or wild, of course. And you've got to look at the board and find the connecting spots. You know, some you need a chain of three yellow trains, so you have to have three yellow train cards, and you'll play your color on those things. And the longer the train, the more points you get, of course. And then, of course, there's also your destination cards. Is that what it's called, Chad?
Yep.
Destination cards, which will say like Chicago to Los Angeles or New York to Portland. And you've got to try to connect your set of trains all the way across the board there. And if you can do it, you get bonus points. It's really simple game. But it's a ton of fun. Like I said, there's a ton of different versions. I actually own Ticket to Ride, and I think we own Ticket to Ride Europe as well, which adds some new features to it, like tunnels and stuff like that, where it's kind of like you have to take a risk in going for the tunnel, but if it pays off, it pays off. Really, really fun game, and we like to play it a lot. So, Chad, I know you're a big Ticket to Ride guy. Is it on your list still?
It was not. It was one of those right around my top 10. And this would, again, be the one of those 10 games, you know, like I said, with Mystery of the Abbey. I just think this game is so elegant. Like, I mean, it came out in 2004, but it feels like a classic game where, you know, when you play it, you're like, I mean, I just can't believe this kind of game concept and everything was put together sooner. It feels like it was from like the 60s or 70s, because it kind of has that classical vibe. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, even like an older look, you know.
Yeah sort of has that 1900-ish type expansion look. Mm-hmm. but it really just flows well. It has some strategic aspects, and I love it. I like Ticket to Ride. I own that, Europe, and Nordic Countries, which is the 2-3 player version, which can get pretty mean. And then also some of the maps I really enjoy. I played the India map, which is cool, and the Switzerland map, which is another mean map where stuff gets pretty tight and you get screwed on routes pretty easily. But I think this is one of the classic gateway games, and really holds up. I mean, it's a game where, you know, now that I've played 100 designer board games, it's not one that I shake my head at playing. I definitely would be up for a Ticket to Ride game right now.
Cool. Glenn, have you played Ticket to Ride?
I tried it once with a couple of friends. It, for whatever reason, didn't make its way into the regular rotation.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that. Like, I have a friend who, when we play it, he'll play, but he's like, I hate Ticket to Ride. I'm like, why? He goes, for him, it's not strategy heavy enough. Like, there's some strategy to it, but I understand that if you're really into, like, the making the decisions and, you know, you can't really backstab anyone or things like that, it's a board game, you know, rather than a social game.
Yeah.
So, you know, if that's your type of thing, like the social, like, try to figure out and things like that, that's not what you're going to get with this. But just in terms of board games, it's one of the best that I've ever played. So, all right, so that's on my list, not on any of your guys's, so that's fine.
Also, a nice fun fact: the only interaction I've ever had with Mrs. Jordan Duncan was me recommended Ticket to Ride.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay. I don't even know that story.
You didn't know that?
No, I do not know that story at all.
Oh, well, never mind then.
Oh.
No, it was. I guess it was before Christmas last year. She was asking about recommendations. Okay. Yeah,
and she went to you.
Yeah, she reached out.
Interesting.
Yeah, I should pull that up because it said
the wife is scoring some points right now.
Yes. I can't remember. This will be kind of layman's terms, but it was, I'm Jordan Duncan's wife. He tells me you're a big board game guy. Recommend this or this. I think it was between Catan and Ticket to Ride, and I kind of gave the pros and cons of those.
And what's funny is she went with Catan, or I call it Catan, that's my Michigan accent bleeding out, and she hates it, but she loves Ticket to Ride.
Yeah.
So she made the wrong choice for her.
Well, I think I did say that I thought, like, Ticket to Ride was better for a family.
Yeah, definitely is.
I kind of feel that way.
Definitely is. So, okay, cool. Good to know that my wife is looking out for me, doing the heavy lifting there, trying to make sure I get the right present at Christmas time.
Yeah, there you go.
Which is what Christmas is all about, me getting the right stuff. So, Chad, why don't you finish off our number threes?
So my number three is the pandemic entry for me, and I think we can combine this, but my specific number three is Pandemic Legacy, which came out last year, and it's pandemic, but it's kind of a weird, I'd say, version of it, where, you know, each and you kind of have to stay spoiler free on Pandemic Legacy. Because the game changes. The first game you play is like regular Pandemic, but you play as a character, and basically a storyline evolves where you play each month. So each month there's stuff that happens, and you open up different boxes and adds different stuff to the game. And just I guess the most basic thing I can say is a lot of crap happens, but and once you're done, you're done. Like, you cannot play the game once you finish the year. So, wow. So it's kind of one of those weird things where, you know, like, once you in December, you know, if you you get two chances to win each month. So, you know, if you lose the first month of January, you play again. If you lose that time, then you still go to February and so forth. But yeah, once you reach December, I think I can, you know, spoiler free say it's pretty impossible to play the game beyond that point, just based on what's happened. But it was such a rewarding experience. Me and my wife played that, and we ended up playing the whole campaign. I think it took us about 19 games to finish it. And we did it in, you know, about a month's time. So about a game a night of, an hour plus game, and just had an excellent time. I know she'll say there was some points during that when I revealed something or opened up a new box, or I was just like losing my mind at what was going on. I got really into the storyline. I thought it kind of turned board gaming on its head, and just really interesting concept, and I love it. And they're coming out with a season two, and I can't wait.
I'm picturing board game on its head. I'm picturing, since it's a pandemic, you open a box and it's like the actual Zika virus escaping into your home or something like that. So, yeah, you told us about this a little bit in your chat, in our group chat, you know, and you were pretty excited when you guys finally completed it. So is it just two players?
No, you can play up to four. I would say, like, though, you want to have
people you can play repeatedly with.
Yes. Yeah. You don't want to be adding people in or out. So, I mean, we actually started January with my brother and his wife. And his wife, who I've mentioned a couple times before, she's a fringe gamer. She'll humor us. This wasn't like her thing where she wanted to commit. So after that, me and Jennifer decided to make the decision that we were just going to plow through together. And it was great. And this is kind of becoming a thing, because Time Stories is sort of like that too, where Time Stories is a little bit different, where you, like, the first, if you buy Time Stories, the base game, you basically get the system and a scenario. So it's almost like you get Nintendo 64 with, like, Mario 64. and then you have to buy different scenarios that you play through the system. But once you beat a scenario, that's it, you know. So yeah. It's an interesting thing, but, I mean, I didn't feel cheated. I mean, that Pandemic Legacy, I probably got it for about $40. So, you know, 19...
20 games, it's $2 a game. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, $2 a game. It's not something where, yeah, now I can't play it again, but, you know, it's almost like something where I felt so accomplished beating the game. It's like I almost want to frame the game board and hang it in my house.
Awesome.
Yeah, I haven't had the chance to play the Legacy version yet, but just from hearing about it, especially just now, it sounds like a fascinating evolution of the medium, almost, in terms of what these games are doing with storytelling.
Yes. Yeah, this had a really gripping storytelling, and there's a couple of things that happened that I did not expect and really kind of make you like I said, I lost my mind. So just stuff that happened, because I mean you're playing a game a certain way, and then a storytelling aspect happens where you're forced to play a different way, and it's just amazing how it hits you by surprise and you don't expect it. It's great. I mean, this is kind of like the Breaking Bad board game almost. I mean that's how I felt like playing it. It was that kind of addictive.
Right now, I'm trying to contemplate if my wife would be in on that, or if I have to find someone else. So cool,
yeah.
Awesome. So yeah, like I said, we're gonna lump that with Pandemic because it's kind of an offshoot of that, correct? So
yeah.
And, points to Pandemic.
And I will say, Pandemic Legacy, like it's incredible because you know it's the highest ranked game on BoardGameGeek.com.
Wow.
With a ton of reviews, it overtook a game called Twilight Struggle, which I thought wouldn't happen.
Based off the Twilight movies?
Not quite. Cold War.
So let me ask you this before going there. If I go and read some of these reviews, you said without spoilers. Do the reviews give spoilers?
There's some. I would recommend, here's a plug, the Dice Tower, I think, does a spoiler-free review.
Cool.
On YouTube. And also Game Boy Geek. He's a guy I think does really good reviews on YouTube, and he gives a spoiler
free
review.
Brad Woodland's YouTube username. So, all right, cool, awesome. So finally got some stuff, getting some points on our list. So that's our number threes, guys. I'll start our number two off, and I'm gonna go with a game that I actually picked up this summer. I had played it once before, didn't ever remember what the name was, and I had a friend pestering me to get this game, and I finally did, and it's a card game called Bang. And Bang is a really fun game for me. I bought the big, giant metal bullet case that comes with a couple expansions and things like that. But Bang is set in the Old West, and I think it's 3 to 8 players, but it's certainly a game where the more the better. And first thing you do is you get a role. You are either the sheriff, the deputy, the renegade, or the outlaws. And obviously the sheriff has to eliminate the outlaws. The deputies want to protect the sheriff. The outlaws want to kill the sheriff. And the renegade, which is, I think it's the renegade, it's the hardest role. You have to be the last one standing, so you kind of have to get it down to you and the sheriff. If the sheriff dies before that, before one of the outlaws, then you lose as well. So you keep that a secret. Then you also get your character that you are, you know, different names and things like that. I don't know any of the names off the top of my head, but they have different abilities and different perks. You know, maybe you can hold more cards, or you can get more health, or things like that, or you can use your cards for different reasons. And so it goes around, and you know, you kind of have to decide how you're going to play it out, because you don't want everyone to know if you're a deputy, which, by the way, the sheriff is revealed. You know, everyone knows who the sheriff is. So if you know, if I take a shot at the sheriff right away, I'm pretty much revealing that I'm a bad guy. But it's a cool game, and there's different ways to play. You can shoot someone. You can have a duel. You can gain your health back. You can miss. There's like a Gatling gun. There's dynamites. There's jail. All kinds of stuff. We've played this a ton. It's a lot of fun. It's one of those games where when you play late into the night, you start to get a little loopy. You start playing with the cowboy talk and the southern accents and things like that. Just a ton of fun, and I really, really like playing this game. It's one of those games that, like, when I look at it, I'm like, man, I want to play Bang. I want to get some people over here and play. So very high on my list, and I really, really enjoy it. So, Glenn, have you ever played Bang?
I think I played it once in a group setting some years ago. I don't remember it very well.
Okay. All right, how about you, Chad?
Yeah, like Bang. I actually like the dice version better.
I don't have the quicker dice version, so
it's quicker. So I mean, I think if you enjoy kind of the, they both have strengths and cons, but I mean, for us the dice version, it's like a 15-minute kind of can get our vibe, and I do see what you mean by like playing up the cowboy talk and into character, which could help with the card version. Mm-hmm. The dice version, you really don't have time to personify that. Also, in the dice version, it's very easy to see who's who. So that's kind of a detractor. It's usually not much of a mystery of what character each person is.
Right.
But yeah, a really fun game. I think it does that kind of deduction aspect in a unique theme with the Wild Wild West that works.
Yeah. And what's cool about it is it's a thing where, you know, even if you get figured out, that doesn't eliminate you from the game.
It's like, right.
Okay, you know who I am. Now you got to take me out, you know. Yep. So that's kind of neat.
For sure.
So, all right, cool. Well, that's my number two. Why don't you give us your number two, Chad?
My number two is Legendary, and specifically the Marvel Legendary. Kind of that IP of version of Legendary. Because there's Firefly, there's Predator, there's Alien, and there's a... Little Trouble in Big China, or Big Trouble in China.
Oh my gosh, China, okay. I almost Legendary. Bought this game not that long ago.
Yeah. I have them all. I'm a nerd and collected it. And I actually have the, this is my Brad Woodling. I have this obscure game that's worth a lot of money, story time. But there's a Fantastic Four expansion for this Legendary game that came out right before, I guess, Sony claimed the rights for Fantastic Four. So now it's 100 cards. And if you look on eBay, a new version of that now is like $150.
My gosh.
It is like insane how this, even used versions, I could probably sell my used version of the cards that are sleeved for, you know, 50, 60 bucks, which is nuts. But really, Legendary is it's a co-op game. Where,
it's kind of like deck building, correct?
Yeah, it's deck building. So you start out with a really crummy hand, and you build up, you recruit heroes. That's why I like the Marvel version the best. You recruit the Marvel heroes to go after the mastermind. And I'm not really a big comic book guy, and neither is Jennifer, but something about this game when we first got it really just sort of seemed to us. And it took us a couple tries. Like, the first couple times we played it, we were kind of like... And we got beat pretty handily and didn't really see how the combos work together. But, I mean, there's so many possibilities now where I own with all the expansions just in the Marvel version. We're probably at, like, 2,500 cards.
Oh, my gosh.
Legitimately. I mean, it's insane. Like, when I lift it, I can do curls with the box and, like, do my workout for the day. But the combos are just endless. And it's really fun to just sort of fire off those combos and take out the villains and work together as a team. But then at the end, if you win, you compare each other's victory points. So it does sort of have that effect where, you know, I won, but Jennifer beat me because she has more victory points. Yeah. Right. Basically the MVP. That's a good way of putting it. But yeah, this is a game we've played a lot. And, I'd say the reason this is my number two, though, is this is my favorite game to play solo.
Oh, you can play by yourself.
Yeah, so you can play by yourself with you operate three heroes. And when I travel with my job, which happens a lot, this is one I always take on the road. Like, I have a little condensed box of just, you know, about 10, 15 heroes that I can play with. And it's something I really enjoy to play with, like in the hotel room and stuff. So that's why Legendary gets the nod as my number two.
Yeah, I almost picked up the Big Trouble Little China version not that long ago. I was at a store and I remember seeing it. I said, they have a Big Trouble Little China game. I picked it up and I was walking right to the register. And then I thought, I'm like, nobody's going to play a Big Trouble Little China game with me. You know, so like I didn't even look at what the game was. I'm just like, no, sold.
I've never watched the movie of that. Oh, and I picked it up. I got it for my birthday, but I haven't played that version yet. But yeah, that's essentially the same thing. It's kind of weird because that's like, it's because the Alien and the Predator and the Firefly, they call their encounters. Mm-hmm. It's like Legendary encounters, but and it's fully co-op and has a couple of different rules. Big Trouble in Little China is essentially the same as the Marvel version, but it doesn't really integrate with the Marvel version, and you can't play that one solo. I know that.
Okay.
Which is kind of weird. But yeah, so I like all of them. Some people prefer the Alien one as their favorite, but just for me, I like the Marvel one the best. That's just sort of personal preference.
Cool. Well, I have not played Legendary, but I am aware of it. I've seen the different iterations at my local game store, and maybe I'll have to give it a try. It's one of those games that the price tag has turned me off a little bit.
Yeah, it can be pretty pricey. Like I said, with all the expansions and stuff, right? that gets into sort of a dilemma with me. So, yeah, I mean, like for my birthday this past time, I pretty much got just expansions or other iterations of games I already owned instead of new games. Sure. So I have to fight that internal battle. First world problem, but, you know.
Glenn, have you ever played Legendary?
I have not. That's another one that I've seen recommended a lot, though.
We should do a Kickstarter, a Legendary WWE game.
I tell you, I think that would be cool, and I want to do like a – this is my design. I want a James Bond Legendary. So,
oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, if it's just rich in characters, I mean
– yeah. I mean, I think that would be cool, like where the heroes could be like Mini Penny, James Bond, Q, stuff like that. I think that would be awesome.
Cool. All right. Well, Glenn, that was Chad's number two. My number two is Bang. Why don't you give us yours?
My number two is another effect of game scheduling that we've mentioned a couple of times. Like I've said, at my game days, usually there's a lot of food. You know, the host makes food. People bring wine. We have, you know, wine and beers and all these things. So you have to start with a casual game to try to get everyone, you know, kind of settled in. And then, you know, you ramp up a little bit. You have something like Dead of Winter, we mentioned, would be a good, like, midday pre-dinner game where it's very intense and you have to think a lot about your options. And then after it, you want a little break. And then after dinner, maybe between dinner and dessert, you have a couple other quick games. And then at the end of the night, in my group, at least, we always have, like, a game where you kind of let loose a little, where you're not thinking about strategic decisions very much, where you just want to laugh at some goofy stuff, maybe, and maybe, you know, people have had a bottle of wine, and then, you know, they're feeling that a little. So, my number two ends every game day that I have, and it is Cards Against Humanity.
Which has recently just kind of exploded into, like, I think it's Target just all of a sudden, like, acquired the rights to it or something.
Yep.
It is everywhere in Target. Booster packs and expansions and a million different things you can buy for this game now.
Yeah, so. I don't have the Target-specific pack yet, but I'm heading over soon to get it. Because I got hooked into getting all the expansions, too, with the larger expansions and the subject-specific expansions, all of the holiday specials that they did the last few years. Mm-hmm. I have that one square foot plot of land up in Maine that they did for the holiday thing a couple years ago. I haven't been there yet, but someday. You know, just so you can get all the cards about Santa.
Yeah, right.
talking about the edgelordization a little bit of these card games. I mean, it is, I suppose, apples to apples after dark, but
sure. Yeah.
That depends in part on what you bring to it. And all the sorts of combinations that you make in playing. With some of the cards that they have in the game, it's also about maybe you want to make one of your friends say something.
Yeah.
I've done that a fair few times.
I do know for a fact that Justin Rosero has dubbed you the king of Cards Against Humanity.
Oh, that is correct.
Well, that's because at a game that I was at his house, I displayed my love of really, like, acting out. Or acting, my dear, while reading the card.
Okay.
Because, you know, some people, you know, reading things to a group of people can be pretty flat. I like to liven it up a little. You know, I like to really invest in the character, you know?
So, okay, you've got every expansion?
I've got all the official ones. Like I said, I don't have the Target pack. I don't... I haven't gotten the political pack that they
The Target one's weird because it's almost like a like you can get tiny little, almost like a pack of baseball cards. It's strange.
Yeah, a lot of the holiday ones were the same way, where you get a pack of like 10 or 15 cards.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, if there's anyone listening to a podcast about games that does not know Cards Against Humanity, you know, to say it's kind of like apples to apples, but it's more like fill in the blanks almost.
Yeah.
You know, you'll get a phrase and you got to fill in, I'm trying to think of one that's more famous. Let me Google one real quick. Donald Trump's first act as president was to outlaw blank. And of course, you've got the white cards to fill in, you know, your answer. And then whoever's turn it is has to read them all aloud, or as Glenn likes to do, act them all aloud.
Well, the ones that I like to act are more like a sentence that someone is saying, like, you know, I don't remember the exact text of the card. It's like, don't bother me. I am literally blank right now. And so I like to really invest in it. Like, don't bother me. I am literally Kanye West right now.
You know what's cool about the game is, you know, I think some people would just be like, oh, that's just a dirty game. But it's actually a really clever game.
Oh, no. There's some dirty stuff and there's some sexual stuff and some obscene stuff and all that. And there's the element of it that, you know, the way a lot of people play is you submit the card that fills the blank in the most, you know, quote-unquote offensive way.
Sure.
But there's a lot of absurdism in it, too.
Right. And what I really like is the double blank. You know, like when you get the card with multiple blanks, you know, I mean, just to really broaden our horizons. So, yeah, you know, I had a feeling that would be on your list. And it's a game that, you know, if you're strapped for cash, I'm pretty sure. Can you still get this one for free online? Or has it become such a big thing now that you can't download the free pack anymore?
I believe you can still get, like, the PDF version and print it out.
Yeah, because, I mean, I remember when it first came out, like, that was kind of the thing, was just download it. You know, like...
Yeah, and it's, that was my first interaction. I'll never forget the day I was at work and I saw one of my coworkers printing out and cutting up her Cards Against Humanity cards. And I just, like, sifted through a couple of them. I was like, what is this?
Yeah, that's not safe for work.
No, not at all.
And she didn't care at her government job to print out something that had foreskin and everything else on it. But,
printing out the old foreskin.
Yeah.
It works.
Cutting it up.
Oh my gosh. Chad, why don't you weigh in on this game a little bit?
I mean, it's a game I've had fun with. And I think it's a game you have to be with the right crowd work.
That's true.
So it is dependent on that. But if you have the right group and the right people you feel comfortable around, and you can, it's another game that never fails to make me laugh at something. So it's accomplished it that way. I mean, I think if you're offended by it, you're kind of, I don't know.
You don't have to play it.
Yeah, know? it's like, how do I say it? Yeah, I mean, it's like, it's like, okay, but I do think it's like, what do you want to do? Ban, like, every Grand Theft Auto video game? That, you know what I mean? Like, if you want to live in...
Well, I mean, I can see someone wanting to remove the Auschwitz card from the game.
Yeah, sure.
That would be an entirely fair reaction that I wouldn't, you know, blame anyone for wanting. I've removed a few because I got the base set long enough ago that it still had all the cards about Glenn Beck and his scrotum, which by now is not as current and not as fun anymore. So those I just kind of put in the back of the box.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember reading an article about the game where some people were talking about how it, you know, promotes racism and things like that. And I mean, I don't know. If you're that, like Chad said, if you're easily offended, why would you play the game in the first place? You know, unless you've been fooled into believing. Yeah.
Well, that's something else that's highly dependent on the people you're playing with. And
you're not going to play that game with someone you don't really know.
And a few of the cards, like I said, if you want to remove them, go ahead and remove a few cards if it's something you know that touches on something. That's not something I'm going to come down on someone for.
Sure. Yeah.
And I mean, I have played this game with one of my best one of my best friends, he had a new girlfriend, and she was one of like a really like hyper aggressive, you know, in your face type personality. So when me and my brother and his wife and Jennifer went and played at their house, we played this game, and it was she was a little too in your face. So that was kind of a bad experience for that, where what my brother's wife would be comfortable speaking around just us four. She wasn't necessarily around people she just met. I would just say know your group, and if you're open to it, you'll have fun with it. And if not, I mean, there's a million other games you can play, so whatever. Don't dwell on it.
Right. Yeah, and I think going back to our earlier conversation, like, if you think it's the game that's bad, I mean, you can take any game and make it like that if you want to, you know. So
I mean, Ticket to Ride is filthy.
Lots of trains in that game.
Trains going into tunnels, please.
Yep. So, all right. So we are down to our top entries. Everyone's got our 10 through 2 in there. And talk about crossover. There's none. All right.
So, yeah, I think we know what's winning.
Yeah, I think so, too. So, Glenn, you want to just keep things rolling? Give us your number one?
Sure. My number one is another one that probably a lot of people know. It's another one that's kind of a gateway game. It definitely was for me, and it's one that I still really love, and that's Dominion.
Okay. Oh, yes.
It is a deck-building game, the deck-building game for a lot of people, like I said, as sort of a gateway. And it's another one that's in sort of a medieval-ish setting, so you could say that's a little cliche, but it has all sorts of different cards that you can buy that give you different abilities and different victory points and all sorts of different ways and strategies that you can use to build your deck to try to get as many victory points as possible. And also a game that has a million expansions. I only have a couple of them, but one of my favorite games that I've ever played of Dominion is not one that I won. It was the first game that I ever played of Dominion Alchemy. With two of my friends, because I got the combo box that has the base set and Prosperity and Alchemy. And so we were trying out Alchemy, and the way that Alchemy works is it has victory point cards that you buy, but it also has curses, which are negative victory points.
Oh, wow.
And okay. So it can be a little hard sometimes to keep track of how many points you have, because you kind of have to shuffle through your deck and not only add up all of the victory point cards, you have to add up all the curses and subtract everything. And so this game went on for a long, long, long time. And then when it finally ended, because one of the virtues of Alchemy is that you can string together long combinations of cards. Like, you play a card that lets you play another card, and that other card that you play is something that lets you play two other cards, and one of those cards is something that lets you draw a card and play it. And so this, you can daisy chain these things on and on and on in a lot of the Dominion variations, but especially in Alchemy. And so this game went on and on and on and on. Finally, we finished, the three of us were tallying up our points, and we found that after this, like, hours-long game, not supposed to be hours long, it was a three-way tie.
Oh, my God.
I mean, one of my friends that I was playing with was so mad that after all of this, we wound up in a three-way tie. I almost wanted to dance. I was so happy. It was so incredible.
Oh, that's awesome. I remember a couple years ago, I think, did they try to launch this online and it just failed really badly?
I don't know. I think there was
like a browser-based version that didn't really... Maybe I'm thinking of something else. Or maybe just the name Dominion, because it's not that uncommon. I have to look that up. So, but anyway, so yeah, okay. Chad, what do you think about Dominion, man?
Yeah, really fun. I mean, I like the deck-building genre a lot, that kind of mechanic. And this is kind of like the grandfather of it, as Glenn mentioned. So it's a game. I mean, I don't think the game has a ton of theme, but it packs a lot of punch for being, I guess, as themeless as it is. Because you start buying and rolling off the card combos and stuff, and you really get into it.
Cool.
I mean, that's also one where sometimes I like to invest a little more storytelling than is actually in a game. And so when I'm putting down, say, my militia card to block someone else trying to make me discard cards or something, I wonder, who are the people in this militia? Did they want to sign up for this? Did they want to be part of my kingdom? What do they think of my rule? Like, what are the hoi polloi like in this game? Because in all the games that you play, you know, you're always on the upper tier of society, right? Because all these games want you to make big decisions and build things and go to war and all these things. So I'm wondering, what's life like for the hoi polloi in Dominion, you know?
Oh, okay.
And since Jordan loves it so much, I'll also announce that game won the Spiel des Jahres. So
ooh,
there you go.
It won. See, Concept was just nominated for the Spielberg.
Glenn has
Spielberg
a couple
Jahres award.
Glenn has a couple winners because Carcassonne won as well. So,
oh.
Yeah.
You know, and I would say this: don't let the name of a game turn you off, because sometimes you just like Carcassonne. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, it's. Yeah. I think maybe they could do a better job, but who cares? You know, like, all right, so Dominion is Glenn's number one. I kind of want to save Chad for last just because he's given so many unique answers. So I'm going to go and give the least unique answer of them all. Yeah. I really tried to be creative and think outside the box, but I couldn't. Catan is my number one. And it's almost based solely on all of the many expansions. I just really, really love the game. my favorite one is Cities and Knights. And I almost thought about ranking them separately, but I'm like, nah, that's kind of dumb because you can't even play the expansions without the base game. I feel like that's the go-to designer board game. It's the one that even people who don't know games know that game. And I just got into it really not that long ago. I think last Christmas is when my wife bought it for me at the advice of Mr. Chad Campbell, apparently. And I think I had played it before, but I never owned it before. And, you know, we started playing it, and we really, really got into it. We went and got – I've got Seafarer's version. I've got expansion packs for every version that I have to allow five or six players. And for me, it's just a I don't want to say a perfect game, but just everything I look for in a game. It's got strategy. It's got social interaction where you can trade and make some deals and things like that. It's got some unique twists. The expansions change it up enough to where it doesn't get boring. I know it's kind of a boring number one pick, but I couldn't really go against it because as much as I love the other things on my list, I'm always up for a game of Settlers. So, Chad, is it your number one, or did it miss your list?
It missed my list, but yeah, this is your you know, your quintessential gateway game. I'd say this and Ticket to Ride. I mean, those are kind of the two, and both are good games that have, you know, held the test of time. So while I mean now I personally like Ticket to Ride better, I definitely give Catan credit. You know, it's like that Hulk versus Andre match, you know. I mean, it really is. I mean, it's something where it's like you may have seen Shooting Star Press and 450s and stuff like that, but you can't take away from what was created when they designed this game, and it still is enriching, and it's led to, you know, at this point, millions of people playing board games.
Yeah.
So,
and there's even some versions I still haven't played yet. So
yeah, I know Starfarers of Catan is.
I have played that. I haven't played that one.
Oh, yeah. I haven't played that one.
So it's I don't know. It's a little too far removed for my liking.
Yeah. I like the Seafarers stuff.
Yeah,
Seafarers. That's probably my favorite iteration.
So, Glenn, weigh in on Catan.
I've played it a couple of times. It's not one that I own, and it's not one that's been in my regular game day rotation.
Sure.
But obviously, for a gateway and as something that a lot of people really, really enjoy. It's an obvious, you know, classic of the genre, but it's not one that I've felt the need to go out and buy, although there is a Star Trek version that I've had my eye on.
Mm. I kind of want to get the there's like a Settling America, and it's like the board, the game board is the United States, and I kind of want to try that, but it looks like Stargazers, and I wasn't as big a fan of that, so I don't know. Maybe not. We'll see.
All right. Yeah, Catan was something that was on like Big Bang Theory, where they were playing that 6 or 7 years ago.
Oh yeah, so
before the big explosion. So yeah, I mean it's a gold standard.
Cool. All right, Chad, finish us off. Give us your number one.
Well, I mean, you know, we talked about some really recognizable games, and I'm kind of surprised nobody's mentioned this one,
because I think
it's the most recognizable game, and it's my number one, and it's a game called Summoner Wars.
Summoner Wars. You said it's most recognizable.
I think you got us.
You might be making that up. I don't even know, man.
It's by Plaid Hat, the same people that do Dead of Winter.
Okay.
And I guess I should give a little backstory about this. I mean, I know it may be kind of surprising being a huge pro wrestling fan and also doing now a 2.5 hour podcast on board games, but
in on 3, pal.
Oh, there we go. So between the sheets level podcast on board games. When I grew up as a kid, I kind of the nerdy things that are classified as nerdy, that type of genre, as far as fantasy and stuff like that, I never was into. I don't think I was judgmental against that. It's just, you know, when I was in high school growing up, I played sports, so kind of that jockey preppy type vibe that I portrayed. So this game, Summoner Wars, is basically chess, but you're a fantasy faction going up against each other, and you have a deck of about 30 cards, and you can recruit those cards onto the battlefield. It's almost like a miniatures game, but it uses cards. So you can go through your deck, which is pretty nice, and you can decide whether you want to get your big champions out there, or if you want to kind of keep recruiting your wimpy guys and hope that's enough, because you're trying to protect your summoner. You kill the other person's summoner, you lose. And it's really a game that's meant for 2 players. You can play 3 or 4, but yeah, it's really 2 players only. I would recommend it. But yeah, I mean, I was that way. I never was into the fantasy genre thing. By the time I did play this, I had started to become, I guess, more accepting of that type of stuff, where I'd read books like Wheel of Time and stuff like that. But still, this was like one of the first games that I got, and I think it was a Tom Fassel review that I decided to go out on a whim and buy this. And then even stupidly beyond that, I decided to present it to Jennifer, which this is totally not her theme at all. but it's just a game that we've both loved, and we've played it over 100 times now.
Wow.
Probably about 45 minutes a game is what you're looking at. And it's a strategic game where you get into the middle of it. It's not, for me, it really hits that sweet spot where for 45 minutes, I'm totally engaged. I'm totally invested. I'm really thinking about it and preparing my brain on what I want to do next and try to outmaneuver my opponent. But, you know, it's not taking the whole night either. So when we put Caden to bed, this is something that we can play, you know, one game of, and then still watch a TV show and go to bed at a decent hour. So it's a game I don't think is for everybody. But just for me, I mean, it's totally for me. The factions are all different, too, which I really appreciate. You have kind of a mercenary faction, which is really cool. And you can deck build and customize. They recently came out with the last 8 decks of this to finish the game up completely. So now there's 40 decks total, which is insane, the combinations. but yeah, I mean, you can be a faction like the Jungle Elves, which are really fast and cunning, or you can be the Tundra Orcs, which are, you know, very slow and powerful, and they really feel like it in their special abilities and the way you can move around the board. So yeah, that's my number one. I know it's kind of obscure for kind of your casual gamers and even getting into serious gaming, but like I said, I don't think this is being many other people's number one game. Like, you know, like Catan and Dominion both, I'd say, would be a lot of people's number one game just because they have really good crossover appeal. I don't think this game has that, but for me, it's tops, and I'd really be surprised if anything overtakes it at this point.
Awesome. Cool. I've never heard of this game, so I have nothing to add. Glenn, I think you're more like me there, correct?
Yeah, that's definitely one that I'm thinking of buying now.
Another vow of silence.
Sure, yes, bye.
So cool. You know what's cool about this list, though, is as I'm adding up the points and stuff like that, this is definitely the most variety we've seen on an episode of Rank and File yet, which is, of course, why the length is so long. So thanks for hanging in there with us. But we've got some games that, you know, maybe you've heard of if you're a casual gamer. And we've got some games, you know, if you're looking into getting into the gaming, deep into the gaming world, there's some stuff that you should definitely try out. And this is how we end every episode. We reveal our top 10 overall point getters, considering we had two games that got multiple votes.
Tied at number 3.
Yeah. So let's go with number 10 and number 9, both with 8 points. Was Ticket to Ride and Flux, which is two of the more well-known games of the genre. Number 8, 7, and 6, all tied with 9 points. It was Legendary, Cards Against Humanity, and Bang, all of our number 2s. Number 5, 4, and 3, Summoner Wars, Settlers, and Dominion, all of our number 1s with 10 points each. And number 2, I gave this one the nod because even though it had the same amount of points, it did get multiple votes. The Resistance, number 2 overall on our list. And that means number 1 was Pandemic with 15 points overall and the only game to make all 3 of our lists. Guys, we talked about a lot of games tonight, so if the PTBN play feed succeeds, I feel like this is our Genesis. If it fails, this is our TNA Genesis. So
this is the Genesis starting now.
Yeah, starting now. You know, Chad mentioned that we are kind of in the Attitude Era of board games and stuff like that. I am shirtless and I've got handprints in my chest just like Sable right now. thanks for sticking in there and talking about games so much. Chad, thanks for lending your expertise on so many games that I have yet to play. So I've got a big list of stuff I want to try out and check out. And
I'll message your wife about
okay.
it.
thank you very, very much. Dusty, if you're listening, I know you're not. Thank you for picking out some good games. She would never listen to one of these podcasts.
Can you imagine 2 hours and 55 minutes in?
I think she'd rather listen to a wrestling podcast, to be honest, at this point. Just for the length, you know. So so if you're looking to get some games, don't just go to Target and don't just stick with Parcheesi. Think outside the box and find a different game, whether it's a card game, whether it's a dice game. We didn't really talk about very many dice games, did we? You can't get real heavy with the strategy when it's just dice. So, but go out there and find some games to play and get some friends together, and you'll find out the games are actually a lot more fun then you realize. It's worth playing, and hopefully this was worth listening to. Until next time, we'll see ya.
Time to play the game! It's all about the game and how you play it. All about control if you can take it. All about your debt if you can pay it. It's all about pain and who's gonna make it. I am the game, you don't wanna play me. I am control, no way you can shake me. I am heavy debt, no way you can pay me. I am the pain and I know you can't take me. Look over your shoulder, ready to run. Like a Cleveland bitch from a smoking gun. I am the game and I make you. So move on out, you can die like a fool. Try to figure out what my mood's gonna
come and be. Come on over, circle, I don't you ask me. Don't you forget there's a price you can pay. Cause I am the game and I want to play. You're gonna be the same. You're gonna change your name. You're gonna die in flames.